I'll call to order the continuation of the Aurora Grandy City Council meeting for Tuesday, May 26, 2015. It is currently Thursday, May 28, 2015. And we are continuing the agenda where we left off, which is item 11, and that is new business. Yes, we will need a roll call. Thank you. May I have a roll call, please? Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Brown.
Again.
Councilmember Harmon.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Barnidge.
Here.
And Mayor Hill.
Also here. So given a generous quorum, we're hearing again on item 11, new business, and ready to continue. We finished item 11A and are ready to proceed with item 11B. If I could ask the city clerk to please introduce the item.
Item 11B is consideration of preliminary fiscal year 2015-16 and fiscal year 2016-17 budget for general fund programs.
And Mr. City Manager.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, members of council. This evening is a very important presentation as we review the preliminary general fund budget that provides the overall day-to-day operations of the city. We recently submitted to the City Council for review a preliminary capital improvement, sales tax, capital improvement program, sales tax, special revenue, and enterprise account presentation, of which we received a comment back from council and will be re-presented next month along with the results of tonight's presentation, which is the general fund preliminary budget that we're presenting to council for your information and most importantly for your feedback. This presentation this evening that you see takes into account in particular the outcomes from the budget workshop that the city staff and the department heads all presented to City Council. You actually spent a number of hours receiving the testimony from departments about the challenges and opportunities and trends for the different departments, and then Council deliberated and provided considerable feedback at the conclusion of those presentations. And the feedback from that feedback throughout will be summarized in another slide as we took all the various different feedback, and there's literally about a half a dozen categories that ultimately we were able to boil all of the different needs down into that we are addressing this evening. In summary, recognizing this is for a two-year period of time, in summary, being presented this evening is a budget over the next 2 years that would be a total of $31.2 million in expenses, $31.3 million in revenues, about a $100,000 difference. It continues the existing existing service levels and makes very modest enhancements to some service levels within the confines of the budget. It is balanced, of course. It continues the establishment of the reserves and the reserves balances that meet or exceed council policies. It begins to address priority concerns that were addressed in the previous workshop that we will go into in far more detail later in the report. It also relies on $250,000 of what we are calling a carry forward of prior year unexpended balance. We are recommending that as a revenue source. In essence, it is taking an amount that would otherwise go to the reserves, but is in this case being recommended to carry forward for budget balancing purposes and other needs for over a three-year period of time. And again, in more detail, we'll present that. When we did the previous budget workshop, again, there was within the workshop, we summarized a number of items that we felt really identified in the variety of issues boiled down into several different categories. These categories were sustainability of operations post the recession budget adjustments that were made. in essence, a number of actions were taken by Arroyo Grande as well as all cities to be able to deal with the revenue levels during their recession period of time, never anticipating that those would actually be sustainable, although many of them are sustainable. And so now staff has gone back and discussing with council those areas that we believe we need to address. That was one. A second is an increased reliance on technology and the increased need for technological support. A walk through the new police building will make it evident of just how reliant we are on technology and the services that we need to continue to be able to get the best use out of that technology and to continue maintain it. The next summary category was the recruitment and retention of employees. And this had to do with a variety of issues, primarily with changes in PERS laws, salary levels, and other items. Next is an aging equipment, aging infrastructure, and deferred maintenance that has taken place, again, in Arroyo Grande as well as in a number of communities. Although to the aside of that, Arroyo Grande did make a particular took a particular action to invest in the infrastructure through the capital improvement program through streets, sidewalks, and other infrastructure, major infrastructure needs, so that those did not deteriorate, and that is a key exception to this comment. The next was continuing to review and research and evaluate service level expectations of the community to ensure that we are continuing to meet the priorities of the community. We identified a number of facility needs, much that had to do with the aging facilities and infrastructure. And then lastly, increased regulatory requirements. A good example is the new and updated and ever-changing stormwater requirements. To the very best possible, we've attempted to address these items in this budget based on a priority basis. We have not been able to, of course, address them all. We have tried to make priority determinations and to begin to address these on a priority basis. Within the budget, we went through a number of processes in the budget, starting with a line item review of every single department and all the expenses. And as a result of just going through the budget, one of the first actions we did was remove $126,000 from existing accounts. This was real money reductions in existing accounts that we felt we could make without reducing any service levels. In some cases, some of these reductions were a trade-off in order to be able to provide another service or a salary position, which I'll note later. So the first was we went through, and there's an actual line item reduction of $126,000. The city council participated in this even within. Nobody was immune from that reduction. The city council count was also affected by several thousand dollars on various accounts that we felt that would be able to be appropriately reduced, as well as the city manager's office and every department in the city. Additionally, this budget includes the funding for the additional PERS contributions that have been previously noted to the City Council for a total of $325,000. It also includes the additional funding for our workers' compensation and liability insurance. This is with Cal JPIA for approximately $130,000 increase. It provides for the raise of 2% of salaries. Most of this is embodied in existing MOUs, and so was previously anticipated, but it does provide for the across-the-board increase of 2%. It provides for the Five Cities Fire Authority preliminary budget recommendations of approximately $264,000. And then it provides for minor increases to the GASB 68, and there's a whole variety of smaller amounts for software licensing that are bundled into this. As far as specific changes, this provides, we went through an evaluation process, I'll just say internally, where all departments submitted their requests. All the department heads, all the executives met and reviewed each other's department. The recommendations that are here this evening are a collaborative effort and are the result of all departments evaluating each other's priorities and coming up with a list of priorities that they felt overall would provide provide for the most needed services. So they were not voting, they had prioritized their own internal services, but then in the actual budget process, as we were making determinations, everybody evaluated all the priority services. So what you see tonight is the priority determination of what, of course, what your city manager believes is are the priorities that should be considered, but if not more importantly, what the executives felt of each other's priorities. The one of the items, or the first on the list, is the information services technician. This is the support position for an existing IT manager. This position is not, as with most of these, this position is not merely or simply or only general fund funded. This is a position that it goes through a cost allocation program, so it's funded from a number of sources because the services go to a number of sources. So the water fund, the enterprise fund, various different funds provide for this in addition to the general fund. The next position is the addition of a GIS information tech position. Again, similar to the information services tech position, this is a position that will go through cost allocation. A portion of it remains in the general fund. The balance of it goes to other funding sources. The part-time volunteer coordinator is being recommended in this, a position that is partially revenue offset that we will review later on. Next position is a park maintenance worker. This position is one that is offset from the line item reductions noted in the previous slide, so there's no additional cost. It was achieved, as many of these were achieved through other reductions within departments as they evaluated where their priorities really lied. The bottom line to this position, as you move up through the services that it will take on and free up somebody up above them, is that it frees up the Director of Public Works to provide more administrative level services that he feels, that we feel, and the council has noted would be appropriate. So that's the total pecking order. The maintenance of this maintenance worker position is actually the bottom line purpose of it was to free up the director to be able to provide more administrative duties. There's two other positions that are included that, by all rights, we should have actually noted when we were doing the CIP enterprise presentations. Two of those are reallocations, reclassifications of existing positions. These are not additional or new positions. It's taking two existing positions, both of them current public works supervisor positions, and reclassifying them into a more appropriate classification that is reflective of the actual duties that they are doing, and also moves them from a non-management classification into a management classification. These two adjustments, while they're addressed tonight in the general fund, they have no impact on the general fund. Only as we had not addressed them previously, it was important that we note them to council during a public session. The second is a public works office assistant position. Again, this is a reclassification of an existing position. It's the reclassification that we can provide more detail on, but it's basically reflecting of creating parity with similar positions in the city. In fact, the only position that doesn't have that parity, but also is reflective of new duties that were assigned to the unit with the addition of capital management, capital project management that was added to the unit, for which there was no additional administrative support staff provided, which had been previously provided through a combination of positions in City Hall when the position was located in City Hall. I have to clarify a poorly worded statement on page 3 of the cover letter that I provided that left the impression that there was an additional $250,000 per year for economic development. The intent of that statement was the $250,000, which I had noted previously. One of the purposes was to help from an investment standpoint to put into place various different components that would assist the economic development program. And in this case, I was talking about the GIS technician position, the tech position, a variety of things that all contribute in little bits and pieces to economic development. But there is no actual additional funding funding going to economic development. We have an economic development program that we're going to be discussing tonight, but it was through my I need to take the full responsibility for that being not clear in that statement. So while we have a refocused and a very specific discussion on economic development this evening, the bottom line is we didn't feel that we needed or really had the opportunity to add additional funding for economic development, but we are going to be focusing on that. There are a few new fees that are being considered and presented. The first is an animal impound fee. With the advent of the remodeling of the police facility, there is a number of cages that have been installed where individuals can drop off animals in a very convenient location at the police station, and we are hopeful that people would be able to reclaim their animals at that facility. There would be a minor fee that would go along with the release and other information that would be necessary about that. So this is for animals that have been dropped off at the police building. There would be a fee that would go along that. There's two fees that are a fee that is particularly technology related, the GIS technology fee that would help to provide for the GIS system and the technology position. Much of the output from the GIS system will be of assistance to the development community. It is very typical that agencies then charge for that because there is a significant investment in developing a robust GIS system, the land data system, the associated land information system that goes with it, that is of significant value to the development community. So GIS technology permit building fee surcharge is being proposed. And the Women Clem Center, we're proposing a rental fee pass-through for security and custodial services that would be associated with the fee for usage of it, and then a general plan update fee that Ms. Malakoff would discuss later. The last item that I wanted to review before we go into further detail is the economic development program. And staff spent a considerable amount of time discussing this one particular item. As when we come back for the final presentation, we're going to be bringing an updated critical action needs plan to you. This council has previously adopted a critical needs action plan to allow the council and the staff to remain focused and to set up metrics for the accomplishment of the very specific priority goals for this community. One of the goals that we're adding into that is economic development. We are aware, staff is very aware, that the future vitality and the ability for us to fully recover is going to depend on the success of our local businesses. There is simply no better and more structural way for us to be able to secure our financial future and to provide growth except through that. And that is to focus on the existing businesses that are here and to assure and assist them to be as successful as they possibly can be, and to have a business outreach program that uses in the most appropriate way the existing properties, buildings that are here that would help support our own local economy. That being said, that's where we are putting the energy into one singular program, and that being of economic development. We noted that we went through a lot of discussion. Should we add another position? Should we have consulting fees? There's a whole variety of things that we evaluated. The bottom line is that we felt that this is something we just need to do internally. It needs to be a part of our structure and fabric of what we do in every single aspect and element of the city's operations, including the city council, that we all have a part and a role in that. And so in doing that, what we want to do is to free up the community development director from a lot of the day-to-day duties that individual has to be able to focus as the general orchestrator of the community development program. Not that that person would do all of it, but would be the one that would be primarily responsible for its accomplishment. So there are specific actions internally and within our existing budget resources that we're making to try to allow that person to have more opportunity to do that. And in the future, there may be future adjustments when we come back to council to help support that position. we are going to be orienting all of the city employees, every single employee in the city, from a full-time to a part-time basis, and even those individuals who may not necessarily currently view what their role is in economic development, and let them know exactly what it is. So that when a prospect, a new prospect, a business or a residential prospect comes in and asks the questions about the quality of the services, the quality of the public safety programs, the quality of the schools, the quality of the local management, the quality of the city council, everybody can say it's the best in the Central Coast. There simply is no place finer. And when somebody goes to the Board of Realtors or the realtor and say, why should I move here, they will be able to answer exactly why from the standpoint of the quality of the services, and it will be reflected in every aspect of the operations. We currently have an outreach program to our local businesses, and we are going to step that up even greater. We spend more time with the local businesses, again, existing businesses, see what we can do to assist them. They can run all the way from the development of facade improvement programs or modifications of addressing existing issues within existing codes or ordinances that may or may not impact business, but we want to have an even tighter relationship with the local business. Many of the capital outreach programs related to infrastructure are ones that, again, as when somebody comes into the community, we want them to see and go, wow, they really take care of Arroyo Grande. I could really tell the difference when I came into Arroyo Grande. The city council has previously put a high priority on those infrastructure needs through the capital improvements and sales tax program. We want to ensure that the technology that we have is in place, ensure public safety as part of the GIS and other GIS systems, the security systems that are in town. We want to make sure that those are in place, that our development, our personnel, everything that we do relates back and supports the economic development program. Even the volunteer coordinator position has an economic development component to it to boost community involvement and to get people to become involved in the community in different ways and outreach, and to help leverage our existing staff time and resources so that we can ensure that primary staff has all the opportunity and time they need to be able to focus on our primary mission. And there are a number of tasks in our existing programs that we are reprioritizing to ensure that there is a focus on the economic development program. Again, I apologize for the misnomer in the staff report, but there is no additional staff or consultants at this time that's being proposed for it. With that, then we have all of the department heads are here to answer questions that the council will have on the particular details within these requests and within the department line item operational details. And then Debbie Malicott, our Administrative Services Director, this evening in the role of Finance Director, will take us through the next number of slides to get in the actual numbers.
Thank you. Good evening. The general fund revenue picture is diverse, but you can see that we do rely heavily upon taxes and assessments. Over 70% of our revenue comes from taxes and assessments, and that includes property tax, sales tax, the hotel motel TOT tax that you may hear about, some franchise fees, some business license taxes that are there. It's about $11 to $11.5 million a year. It's certainly an important component of our revenue picture. In developing the revenue outlook for the next two-year period, there are a number of assumptions that have gone into these numbers. We have used our best professional judgment. We have sought out the advice of many advisors that we have. We contract with a company called HDL that provides information to ourselves as well as a number of other cities related to sales tax. So we've tapped into those resources. What do they think is happening? Where do they foresee as the trends that may be affecting our city? And because they know us and contract with us, they can give us some pretty good insight into where they think the future is headed. But, of course, none of us have a crystal ball. So there are assumptions that have been made. We think that they are conservative and yet realistic. We project that property tax will grow by about 4.5% each year. Sales tax will grow 5% in the first year and 4% in the second year. Some of that is because of the increase. The increase will be about the same, but because in the first year it's on a lower base, it seems like a higher 5% is a higher percentage of the prior year. We project that the Tourism Business Improvement District will continue to do well in their efforts to market our local hotel rooms, and we will continue to see an increase in that TOT, approximately 4% each year. And the revenues do rely on a couple of new fees. They're not large money makers by any stretch, but as Bob mentioned, we are proposing, if the council is supportive, we're proposing of creating the animal impound fees, a GIS fee, a fee that is related to renting the women's club when we require groups. Certain groups, depending upon their event, may need security at that event. They may also need extra custodial services. Because we have in the past told them you need to go get, for example, a security firm to be there for your event, we have had very inconsistent results of what that would look like. So what we would propose is that we would go out through an RFP process, get a security firm that we would work with, and then we would just pass that fee directly on to the renters if it's required for their event. So it's not anything that would make money for us, but it would probably save a lot of staff time and headache dealing with lots of different security firms, and some of them know our protocols and some of them don't, and then we have to follow up, and we have inconsistent results from the security. Same with the janitorial. So that's what that fee is all about. And then the last fee is a general plan update fee. That's not uncommon in a lot of cities, that for every plan review that comes through the door, you would have a fee that would go towards assisting to update the general plan the next time we have a general plan update. As you know, these are very expensive undertakings when we update various elements of the general plan. There is some funding in the current budget to do limited updates to the general plan, but it is certainly an underfunded area of need, and this may be one way to help us bridge that gap to help update our general plan as frequently as we need to update it. On the expenditure side, we are a service organization, so as you might imagine, salaries and benefits make up the lion's share of our expenditures, approximately 66%. Another 32% is for supplies and services, which also includes the agreements that we have for different contractual services, such as for the Five Cities Fire Authority, for dispatch services, both with the City of Grover Beach for fire and with the Sheriff's Office for police. In the case of building our budget, wherever we have contracts in place where we know what the next year's costs are going to be, which several of them are multi-year contracts, so we do know that, we plugged in what those known contractual obligations are. If we don't know what the contract or expenditures would grow by, maybe the contract is expired, maybe we just don't necessarily know what the price of pencils is going to do in the next 2 years, we used a pretty conservative, about a 1.5% across the board increase. So where we knew what prices were going to cost us, we plugged that known number in. If we didn't know, we used 1.5%. And for comparison, CPI is less than 1%. It's right about 0.5 right now. So we think that inflationary factor is probably reasonable to use. Looking at our expenditures by department, police and administrative services, which is where the Five Cities Fire Authority contract resides, as you might expect, the public safety is a large share of our budget. And then Public Works as well is a large share. It's about $15.3 million a year and does not vary much from year to year as far as the breakdown. This is the 15-16 year, but 16-17 looks very much the same when you look at it by department. When we looked at the 10-year forecast and what the future may hold for us. As you may recall, we foresee a point where our revenues are not going to keep up with our expenditures. And this is not expenditures based on a grandiose idea of what we'd like to have in our budget. This is status quo. This is what we can currently have as service levels based on things we know, such as PERS increases, that are going to cost us a lot more in the future. It's not adding a lot of positions. It's not increasing service levels to the community. We have seen that over the next 10 years, revenue growth is going to be necessary in order to maintain our current service levels. And that is one more reason why economic development is a key focus for us over these next couple of years. Again, all the department heads are here and can answer any questions about any particular staffing changes that are proposed in the budget. But the ones that are recommended are here on the screen, as Bob mentioned them earlier, the information services technician, a GIS technician, the volunteer coordinator. This is a position that would also be a recreation coordinator. And in addition to the volunteer coordination on a citywide basis, would also coordinate classes. So we anticipate that this position would generate, in the first year, approximately 50% of their costs would be recovered through additional revenue generation based on classes that they would bring to the city and to the community. Potentially in the second year, with a little momentum, we think they may be able to do even better than 50% in recovering the cost of their program. And then, as the city manager mentioned, the parks maintenance worker is a trade-off between using contractual services to provide that work and bringing that back in-house and freeing up the public works director to do some additional administrative and oversight and training and employee development and things that need to happen in that department. Of course, we can do anything, but we can't do everything, so our budget does continue to have some unmet needs in it. As I mentioned, the general plan update, a comprehensive update, is very expensive and is not something that we are financially prepared to do at this time, so that continues to be an unmet and unfunded need. The police support services sergeant is currently unfunded and will remain unfunded in the next two-year budget cycle. Planning manager, likewise, is an unfunded position and is proposed to remain unfunded. And as the council is aware, we know that we do not have adequate replacement funds for all of our equipment and technology and facilities and infrastructure. It's something that we're working to identify. We're trying to come to gather the information so that we can make you aware, make the community aware, and our current replacement funding, how many years will it take us to replace certain items. We know some of that. I know the public works director has talked about sidewalks and curb cuts and some of those things, but we want to take a look at all of our infrastructure, all of our technology, vehicles, everything that we have out there to figure out what should we really be putting aside today to replace these items in a reasonable time period in the future. We know that's unmet, but we don't know yet how much. So we'll be working on that in the coming year to try and get that information. As Bob mentioned, the next steps in the budget process are that the council would consider the full budget adoption on June 9th. It would include all programs, all funds. It would take into consideration anything we heard from you on May 12th and anything we hear from you tonight, even though it's not May 26th. We will reaffirm the priorities that we hear from you. What are the things that we hear from you and from the community and in our best professional judgment about what are the most important things for us to be working on in the next 2 years? Make sure that we're all on the same page about that. And as Bob mentioned, we'll bring you back an update of the Critical Needs Action Plan so that, again, we're all on the same page about what are those important priorities and what are we going to be able to do in the two-year time period to make progress on those priorities. So that will be coming back to Council on June 9th. So with that, we're here to answer any questions that you have and be happy to receive your direction.
I just have a couple of, thank you very much, Debbie. I have a couple of just very brief concluding comments. First, coming back with the critical needs action plan, in the 5 months, 6 months that I've been here, it is amazing what my work plan started out and how it has evolved with the addition of reclaimed water, a number of issues that have come up along the way, and I am nothing short of amazed at your staff, your executive staff, and the rest of your team's ability to be flexible and take those issues on. It's been a real pleasure working through them. As we've been developing up ultimately into the budget process that's been presented here this evening, to protect their ability to be able to really focus on these items at our next meeting, we really do want to have a very focused discussion, the best we're able to on affirming council's priorities as reflected through this budget. Ideally, and I'm confident this will happen in the future, ideally in January we wish we could have sat down in a setting with the community and with the city council to be able to establish overall goals and priorities and to affirm those items are still left in the critical action plan, but just all the dynamics that were going on didn't allow that to take place. That doesn't mean, though, that we shouldn't do our very best that we can to continue to reaffirm our priority goals so that staff can remain focused, so we can put the metrics in place to ensure that we have success and the best possible opportunity and use of the budget. And we think that's going to be an important discussion next week. And then just lastly, again, I wanted to thank the staff for a remarkable job through this. When they came into the meeting room, they all acted as deputy city managers and assistant city managers to look at the best interests of the city overall. They really get it that there are limited resources and a lot of needs out there and how to prioritize them, and they're very good at it. And I wanted to thank the city council. I found it remarkable in our capital improvement program, the amount of time that you focused on the details and simply understood what was going on. I can't tell you how much staff appreciated that, because it just makes their job so much easier to be able to go back and make good quality decisions. So with that, we're very ready to provide whatever additional information you have and take direction and comment from council.
Okay, I guess the first thing, order of business then, would be questions from council. Jim, would you like to start?
I think I guess I'll start with the 5% sales tax increase. It just seems a little bit high. I know we've had that trend recently. As you mentioned, the CPI is at 0.5%. It just feels like that's a pretty high number. So I'm just wondering what the logic behind that is. Is there a sector or something?
It is mostly based on the information that we have from HDL and what they foresee as the sectors that are going to do well in the next year and 2 years. It does seem a little high. I questioned it too when they brought it up, and I wasn't sure that we were going to see that kind of growth. They feel very confident that all sectors are growing. New car sales are going very strongly. We don't have a lot of that in this city, so I think in some other communities they may see even better than 5%. If you have a lot of car sales, those have seemed to rebound quite well. But they are seeing growth across the board, and they believe that for our community, 5% is not an unrealistic number for us to achieve.
And then on the $250,000 savings, I get it in the first year. I mean, we basically know where we're at and know we'll have available. If we've already built in $126,000 that we've identified in savings, what's the logic that then there's another $125,000 somewhere else in the budget that we're going to save as well? I guess the way I'll put it.
So historically, we have we don't have a use it or lose it mentality in this city, which is a wonderful thing. We don't spend just because our budget has a little bit money left at the end of the year. We're not out there frantically trying to use it all up. We have historically saved about $300,000 a year if you look back over the last many years. So we feel pretty confident that is, some years it's even higher than that. It has been. This is based on things in all departments across all different types of expenditures. If we have a vacancy in a particular position. Some years you have lots of vacancies. Some years you have only a few vacancies. Sometimes the contractual services you thought you were going to need or use don't end up being needed and spent during the year. So historically, that is about a 2% savings. It's about $300,000. We're proposing to use about 250 of that. So we think that that's an achievable and realistic number.
So then going back to the 126 that we've identified in savings year over year, is that going to be from actual changes in operations as opposed to unused funds? I don't know if you understand the question I'm asking. So,
yes, it is actually two different things. The 126 is actual line item reductions, and I'm not picking a council, but only, for example, there's a line item that provided $5,000 for additional furnishings within the city council. Actually, there's a capital program that's going to address that. There's no reason to continue putting that $5,000 in there, so it's actually reduced. It's a real dollar savings. The police department in animal control has a contract with the services in animal control. It goes up and down. There's an average amount every year. We felt confident with the participation of the chief that we could actually reduce that. It's a real savings. So those are real savings amounts, actual line item reductions. The $250,000 is the anticipation of the under expenditures that occur just every year. They're a very predictable amount. They may be even larger than that. And we are not suggesting to use all of that. Part of that still goes to the fund balance, but a part of it does get carried forward and continued use for recurring revenues.
And then on the let's kind of take the positions backwards on the park position, you're proposing that it would be offset completely from a contract position. So we're looking at a full-time, you know, with benefits position compared to what I'll call a private sector position. I just can't see where we're getting 40 hours for 40 hours there. So
I will give it a high-level explanation to it, and then Jeff English can provide further detail to it. It's not actually trading a position for a position. This is a contract amount. There's a contract amount of approximately, Jeff could correct this, but $120,000 to $130,000 for contract services within Public Works. We are taking $63,000 of that, which is the fully burdened cost of the employee, reducing the full contract services by $63,000 and applying that to the salary of the new employee. Public Works, from a priority standpoint, they believe that this position will pick up many of the responsibilities of what that contractor did, but there will be other ways that they'll have to pick up some of those services, some of the services the contractor did, through dispersing that to other employees that are assigned in locations that are adjacent to where the contractor was working. But that on the overall, that this would provide them greater flexibility and use of staff to allow the ultimate goal, which was to free up the director to not do some of the more routine tasks that actually would be more appropriately done by lower level individual, primarily those doing with the Indigenous Tree Program, the Arbor Program.
Maybe I'll ask all three of these questions about the additional employees, and then we can have them answered in that order. Because I admit I'm still struggling with, yeah, there's these additional responsibilities. It just seems to me they're going to eat up whatever time we've gained, and then some maybe, and we'll be right back where we were. So I'll be interested in going on then to the information services technician. And I recognize we have a lot of technology. We have a lot of new technology. Police station's a good example of it. I am wondering where though we get 100% increase. So to hire another full-time employee if we really had that much work. And I'll preface this by saying, having gone through this through my work at one time, clearly we had an overstressed IT person. We even hired a part-time person, but we were never really able to fill their time. And so that's my concern, is that we've really looked at exactly what this person is going to do, because once we've hired a full-time employee, it's going to be very difficult to unwind that. So I assume that's going to probably come from them as well.
Okay. Let me address that from a couple of aspects. One, while we currently only have one actual full-time person, we also do have a contract with a service provider that provides supplemental assistance. So we actually, from one standpoint, have more than just one person here. It's just a provider through contract. We actually try to limit the use of it because in the IT world, as opposed to in maintenance, it's very expensive to contract the service. And the new position will be picking up what the contractor was supporting us with. We are reducing an amount of that contract service that simply won't be needed anymore, and that's part of the funding to go into the new position is the reduction, in this case, of the contract position. It'd be hard for me, and definitely other department heads can address this issue. It'd be hard for me to systematically quantify the exact need, except to say, hands down, this was the number one issue that departments felt. The lack of having this is distracting them from being able to do a lot of their primary duties and responsibilities simply because they can't get timely IT services. They can't have somebody come in to help them set up new applications, new programs, things that they have the capability to do. Maybe they've even bought it, but they can't get it into place because Walt just simply isn't available to be able to do it. I think individually they could provide their departmental cases for it, but it is the number one citywide demand from the departments is this IT position.
I guess you kind of summarized that in saying that there's a huge amount of unmet need, that in fact there are requests that go unfulfilled, period. Okay. And then finally to the GIS position, I understand how useful GIS can be. I just, again, it's a full-time position. Are we really funding a position that I realize we're going to recover some of the costs from it? I'll ask a question about that in a minute. But again, is this just something that's nice to have? I'll call it a want versus a need. And does it really, is it, on the other side of it, are we really going to have either revenue stream, or are we going to have actual savings? In other words, are we going to see that this technology tool actually translates into saved dollars, or just, I don't mean just, but an increased level of service? Because it really is all about sustainability. Is pretty much all about the dollars right now.
Again, this is an excellent position for the departments as they talk to address what their individual needs are. My own personal experience with it is that the GIS has simply become so embedded in the day-to-day business for all of the departments, and currently we're shortchanging the department's ability to do this. With the police department, their crime analysis program, there's a crime analysis program waiting there for a GIS person to be able to have good current data, to be able to take crime statistical data that can help the police chief take limited resources and as unlikely as this might seem, actually have a tool to help predict where best to stage officers and equipment for where future crime and incidents might happen. In the police world, the GIS system is invaluable on a whole variety of issues, from on staffing and scheduling, placement of officer, placement of staff, routing on the go routing. There's a whole variety of issues. In public works, it's a mainstay program. And, of course, planning for the analytical tool in the planning department. From my perspective, it is a cost avoidant in the future when they need to have information that can be gathered very quickly through a GIS. It's actually two components of the GIS, the Geographic Information System and the associated management, MIS, Management Information System, that they can actually interrogate the system and get data that they need for planning decision-making that would otherwise have to be derived through surveys that are very expensive, literally out in the field surveys. From my perspective in this city, with the sophistication of the services, the GIS system will be very important. But I think the individual departments could speak to it very succinctly.
Okay, I'll just preface the anticipation of that. Again, how does that translate down the road into actual savings that we would expect to see in the future? And I think those are all my questions at this point. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Do you want me to save the questions for the individual department heads, or how are we going to do
that? Actually, I think it would be, you know, that would be great. They'd love to have the opportunity to come up and address them individually. So I think I'd be happy, or Debbie, if you had anything on the numbers or generalized, we'd be happy to address that. Otherwise, feel free to call up a department head, and maybe, in fact, maybe you want to call them up individually. Any questions that you have, that you could all interrogate them thoroughly.
Okay, well, let me ask Debbie a question. On the dispatch, the Grover Beach dispatch for fire, Debbie, 72% increase. I understand why. When next time it's increased, when will that be increased again? Is what's the talk behind that? You want
to address that?
Sure.
I actually did dig into that one.
Okay.
This will be the increase. When the reason for the increase is when the Grover Beach dispatch. I want to make sure.
Correct. I have another question about county, but yes,
okay. So on the Grover Beach. So when Grover Beach took on the dispatch for the fire authority, there was literally just an estimate and a quick estimate of what the cost would be before having actual full year of service. Now that they have operated, they know all the calls for service. They have been required to adjust their staffing level accordingly, and this is the year where they've come out with this is the level that will be needed. And the reason for the large increase is because, in essence, there's an additional position the costs are being distributed. In the future, unless for some reason there was some dramatic change of service or additional calls or dispatches, the costs would be more in the line of what you would expect cost of living costs to be. So this is the significant cost. So it would be approximately this on a going forward basis.
Okay. And then the 7% for county dispatch, is that sort of a normal increase? Do you think we'll see that in the years to come, or?
That one I would need to defer to the chief.
Okay. Well, sure. Yeah.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. As far as I'll address just that question right now, the county dispatch is based on our actual costs of the dispatchers that work our console at the sheriff's office. And so the increase, my understanding is the increase is based on changes in those employees' positions, steps within the county pay system, and any adjustments they had on their pay.
Okay.
Does that include like the relay station antennas and those sorts of things to improve the actual radio transmission quality, or is this only for the staffing of the dispatch?
The vast majority of the contract is for the staffing of the dispatch with some minor equipment as it relates to those dispatchers themselves. As far as our overall backbone or radio communications backbone and the maintenance of that, we still maintain that. They provide the dispatch services.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, I have one. I have another question. If we can just, I'll just get you while you're here. The animal impound, which I think is a great idea, by the way, is that for, are we going to hold those animals overnight, 24 hours? How will that work?
Well, right now, just to back up a little bit for people that don't know, our fees for animal services are based on the number of animals that are taken to animal services, and then the time they're at animal services, we pay for those animals if they were recovered from Arroyo Grande. What we have found, and we've worked, as many of you know, our animal services costs used to be a lot higher, and we've worked diligently to bring those costs down. One of the ways we have brought those down, one way you can bring those down, is to encourage licensing because you get a credit for the number of licensing of animals. Arroyo Grande has been very good about that, and so we've done well. But the other one is simply reducing the number of pets that go up to animal services. Before the new station opened up, or the remodeled station, we had very limited resources to keep the animals on site. What we found was the majority of pets that get out during the day, their owners get home about 5:30 or 6 and realize they're gone and try to find them. And in our case, many times animal services had just come in the afternoon to pick up the animal if they're, for example, picked up sometime during the day. So what we're proposing now is we've put three kennels in addition, large kennels, in addition to some smaller kennels for smaller animals or cats. And we're coming up with procedures right now. I don't have the exact time, but at least overnight, a 12-hour period, where we would house the animals, provide public information for people to call the police department, and the likelihood they can recover the animal right from the police department without going to animal services, which is quite a bit higher. One, in fees when you pick up your animal, and two, the city of Aurora Grande gets charged for it.
Okay. No, I think it's a great idea. Yeah, go ahead.
So are we planning to charge what the county would have charged? Is that what I'm seeing here, that our intent is that if the county charges, I think, $72 or something, that's what we would charge?
That's not my intention at this point. It is a much smaller fee simply to cover the cost of the food and carrying of the animal for the period they're there. We really want to encourage people, first, to license their pet and keep control of them so they don't get out. And then second, when they do get out, and it happens, even responsible owners' pets are pretty sneaky, and when they do get out, what we want to be able to do is return them to the residents as soon as possible. And so that actually saves us money if we get that back to the resident instead of sending it to animal services, let alone time.
So the income's we're at least sharing the savings to the citizen, that if their pet does get out and you pick them up, we're going to charge them something, but not the same as they would have paid.
It would be definitely less than animal services, depending on
the savings on top of that.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And so, if people get home at 5:30 in the county, they can go get their animal. It's not open, right? Or could they go after hours and get their animal?
No, they
can't. It would stay overnight.
And so it would definitely stay overnight. And the county has a host of fees depending on the situation with the animal.
Okay.
It's quite expensive.
So, but here, can they call after hours? Because the business office at the police tomorrow would be closed. Is there a way for them to get them, or they would stay overnight? It would just be cheaper in the long run, obviously.
Both. We're actually looking at how we would be able to, if they did call after hours, notify the on-duty officers to have them meet us at the station. That's part of the goal of the program, is to get the pet back to the owner as soon as possible.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay, that's my only question on that. I think Barbara had another question.
I just wanted to clarify, because that was the question related to, in the staff report on page 4, it indicates first impound $65. The fee would be waived if they had a current license. So are these projected fees in the report based on what the county charges?
If I could, those are just provided. Those are the county fees, just
county.
Provided to you for
just
context.
The ballpark
just
context.
Just to give you an idea of what the county is currently charging, but we have not yet done the analysis that we need to do to determine what our costs would be and what fee we would propose to set.
Okay,
they're just
and then,
for comparison.
And then based on that, then that's when Chief Annibale would have a better idea as far as staff time, you know, the impound and all of that, and then come up with a fair fee. Okay, very good.
And if I could add one thing, it's really important that we keep in mind that that fee, if we can keep it at just as low as we can, encourages people to come get their pets. One of the concerns is when the fees get so high, is people aren't able to recover their pet, and then nobody wins with that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like an impound car?
Very much like one.
Mm-hmm.
With legs.
With legs. And knees. Thank you, Chief. That's all I have.
Thank you. Let's see. So I think I have a question on the volunteer coordinator. Should I ask that of you, Bob, or of John? Okay. John, so the volunteer coordinator, it's going to increase revenues, and that, I'm assuming, is through special interest classes. I think that's what it said.
Yes,
and
the proposal is that two-thirds of their position would be as a volunteer coordinator to coordinate volunteer activities for the entire city, not just our department. And one-third of their position would be committed to increasing the current level of class participation, yes.
Okay, so the classes, how would that volunteer coordinator, what's the idea of how they would would they go out and try to contact teachers? Would they see what people in the community are interested in as far as classes? Because I think they will generate revenue. You said that the classes are really popular. Now the economy's picked up, but how will they try to get more people interested and know which classes are going to be popular?
Well, it'll be a combination of things. Certainly it's going to be a review of current trends. I mean, we get trade magazines and things and excuse me, that help us figure out kind of what current trends are. Okay. So they're going to explore current trends. They'll also go out and promote the program within the community more than we're able to do now just because of lack of staffing time.
Okay, so actually bring more people in.
Yes.
Okay, I have some ideas for classes, an iPhone class. It's not funny. It's so true.
No, it's a great idea.
My parents would come and take that, I'm sure.
we always appreciate new class ideas. We're pretty much willing to try anything at least once. Okay.
I think that would be popular. Or a computer class. I don't know if you have one that would cover email.
Yeah, it'd have to be laptop computers because we don't have a computer lab.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's see, John. Okay, I think that's my only question for you, John. And then I have a question either for Bob or Jeff on the maintenance worker.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead. I mean,
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Anybody else? Okay. And it also relates to the volunteer coordinator and the rec coordinator. So there. In the staff report, it says volunteer coordinator / recreation coordinator. So is that still the same position?
No. Yes. The title of the position will be recreation coordinator. Their responsibilities would be volunteer coordinator and classes, yes.
Okay, very good. And then regarding the volunteer coordinator, would this also expand to the different department heads? Or is this just only the rec? What I'm trying to say is that if one of our departments could really use a volunteer because they're working on a specific project, they could, you know, I don't know whether it's additional copying or, you know, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. then could it be extended to in-house related to what might be cultivated for, you know, whether it's the planning department or public works department or even your department to cultivate the volunteers? Kind of like I envision the department heads would say, volunteer coordinator, we have a project coming up in 6 months. Is it possible to recruit for somebody? These are our needs, and that might be something. Do you think they would have time to do that in addition to the rec? And
yeah, that's actually revenue. The plan for this position.
Okay, very good.
It's actually modeled after a position that I researched in Southern California in a city a little bit larger than ours. They actually had a full half-time position that was just a volunteer coordinator. They started a program from nothing, and within 3 years they had 400 volunteers that did all different kinds of help throughout the city, including helping with mailings at City Hall, helping with even washing vehicles, helping with park, some different kinds of extra park maintenance that the limitations of the staff doesn't let us get to. So the plan is that it'll be a citywide program. We'll set up a program that coordinates the needs of the other departments and probably even helps give them some ideas on how they could use volunteers.
Right, and that's okay. Perfect. That's exactly what I was hoping would be where it would go. So thank you. I think that's all I have.
Sure.
I'll have some questions, but I'm waiting for Kristen to get done. And then
well, I just have one more question for. Sorry.
Jeff, come up.
Yes, please. So, Jeff, what Jim was talking about, the park maintenance worker, the contractor that we're not going to have anymore, some of that's going to go towards this position, are we still going to have that contractor part-time?
We did have a contract to complete a variety of park maintenance functions. The council approved this contract 2 years ago. That contract has since terminated. Okay. We have not continued that contract until this matter is resolved, and depending on what the council action is, we'll either contract that or those duties will be picked up by staff.
Okay. So some of the work that you've been doing on trees, for instance, tree inspections, that will be moved down to Pete, the city arborist, and that'll free up some of your time to do some other tasks that are more projects and such.
Certainly. This is part of an overall department refinement. I've been here 2.5 years now, had an opportunity to really see what's working, what's not working. The strategy previously was to take some of our part-time staffing money and put it into contract services. What we found is that there are a number of challenges. One of them is also that these proposals are intended to be revenue neutral to the general fund. So I'm not asking for any additional funding. I'm asking for flexibility to use the funding that we already have. Staffing levels are still low. We had a larger staff a number of years ago. We're doing well, but not as efficient as I would like to be. And one of the areas of concern is that there are a number of duties that are not being done now that effectively and efficiently, which are being done by myself. So what the city manager mentioned earlier is that this is kind of an overall refinement, department refinement goal, and some of the tree evaluations, meeting with residents, doing letters to residents about trees, things of that nature, which I do. The idea is that one of our existing staff person will take on some of those duties. To answer your question earlier, Councilman Guthrie, there is a drop in overall staff hours. There's no question that the private sector can do some of those tasks more cheaply than we can do. But there are some inefficiencies in that and some challenges that are created that this is intended to resolve. And so my goal is to transfer that contract services money into a full-time position. It'll give us more flexibility to cover staffing on the weekends. We have a lot of weekend events. We have some staff on the weekends. It's part-time staff. Right now, we currently only have 2 full-time park workers and 2 part-time park workers, and getting a full week schedule covering the 5 days plus the weekends is a little challenging for us, so it provides us with some more flexibility there. It gives us ability to cover vacations. Many of our staff have been here a long time, so they have a number of vacation hours, and we need to cover those, so another full-time staff person will help with coverage. And they'll take on some specific duties. Still do maintenance. The idea is that some of those duties that I would anticipate that one of our maintenance workers who with a little more experience will take on, they'll still continue to do custodial work, tree trimming, all those mowing, things of that nature. But we'll be able to take on some additional duties as well. Just wanted to mention that this is really this overall efficiency for the department in our ability to provide service delivery. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Jeff. I think those are all my questions right now.
Councilmember Brown.
You can sit down for a minute. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to just dig into that, Jeff.
Hold on, Jeff.
I'm sorry. I'm trouble with the coordination up here. I know. Okay. So I remember when we did this contract originally, and this is the reason I have some concern about it, is that there were things like significant number of training hours that we do in-house versus that we didn't have to provide through the contract. I certainly understand the, hiring at the bottom so that you're freeing people at the top. It is this just straight trade-out of, so while there's not as many hours, and this is, I'm just wondering, what real efficiencies are you talking about? Is it really just the ability to, like you say, cover vacations, to work out scheduling? Because it just seems like there's still this much work to do, and you've got it contracted, and now you've got fewer hours to do the same amount of work, or you're only going to. You're not even going to break even.
We've created some other efficiencies over the past 2 years that are helping us reduce our maintenance impacts as well. Some of the areas that we previously had the contract maintenance company complete, we've taken out the lawn. It's now an easier area to maintain. We've done some work to remove turf. We've done some other items that have created some more efficiencies so that impact when we lose that contract will be less impactful on the department. And in fact, we haven't had that service now for a month, and we've been kind of holding our own. We brought in a part-time temp worker to assist, but the service levels have not dropped dramatically. And so I anticipate that we will be able to meet all of the previous maintenance responsibilities. It really is kind of focused on what the city manager said earlier, really allowing us to use our staff more effectively and appropriately to assist myself. There's some demands administratively that we're just not meeting. And so that's the whole purpose. But, there is some efficiencies. I'm not against contract services. That continues to be a strategy for us. We still do have some contract services money, and there are places where it makes sense for us to use a contractor, and we're going to continue to do that. I'm just looking at the overall department and how we manage our duties, and in my opinion, this is a way in which we can be more effective.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I have one more question. I'm really done. This is just, I saw looking through the budget, just all the paper and the ink we use to, and I'm wondering if the Planning Commission, we can get them iPads so that we can get rid of the, I know when I was on the Planning Commission, I thought that'd be a great idea. And they're not, they've gone down in price a lot, and then it's not the staff time to print it, it's not the ink, it's not the paper, and frankly, it's just sort of the right thing to do as far as, not waste all that trees, paper. So that's not really a question, that's a comment. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could you put up the slide with the additional staffing back in? Okay, Bob, I have, I'm going to start out with some general questions and then I'll probably drill down from there. Prior city manager Steve Adams was very good at dealing with the fact that we had reduced revenues and we're going through a difficult time, and he got us to give a high level of service with minimal staffing. And he's to be commended for that. And now we have some additional revenue, and yet we have additional issues with the fire authority. I think we have a 17% increase because we're now going to be correctly applying the formula plus getting a battalion chief. We have additional PERS costs, which is even higher than that, and let alone the unfunded liability costs that we have. Why are we taking this $250,000 in carryover, or the $602,000 in additional revenue, and not applying it to those needs first before we start building? Because what we're really doing is we're bringing staff back, or staff that we could have wanted or could have needed back then but couldn't afford it. Why are we now deciding to add additional fees to the budget, which the public doesn't like, the development community clearly doesn't like it, and yet we're saying, on one hand you said we're not using the $250,000 for economic development, but we're using it for the staffing issue. And it just doesn't match in my mind. It doesn't jive in my mind that we're using this revenue when we have these already defined costs that we should be paying down.
Okay. Obviously, a bottom line question. These are matters of judgment for us and for the staff, and I'll do my best to address it from the matter, from the perspective of judgment. And first, let me note that, once again, a number of these are actually being paid for as a result of the departments reevaluating their existing budgets and changing their budgets, such as the park maintenance worker, to provide that at no additional cost. So it wouldn't matter if we added $250,000 or made any other adjustments. This is Jeff English saying, as the department head, I think this is more important to do this to be able to provide a continuity of services and quality of services. Almost in every case, there's a piece of that in each one of these positions. There's During the last few years, every city, and Mr. Adams did an excellent job of going through and evaluating, and cutting back so that every year that he could come in and say, there's a balanced budget, and we are not going to go over that budget. That's exactly what he was charged to do. The city council, of course, accepted and expected that type of service. So now we are at a part where there are incremental changes that are taking place. And as we presented in the workshop, it's important, we believe that it's critical that we evaluate on a very modest and incremental basis where do we need to start shoring up some of the services that we have either reduced, and that there are long-term implications from continuing those services to be reduced, whether it be through a deterioration of facilities, a lack of maintenance to the infrastructure, or just taking care of issues such as the technology system that's in place. And so on an incremental basis, the staff has evaluated where should we be putting money into infrastructure, or where should we be putting it into beginning to address some of the other service needs. We have cut back, but the service needs are still there as the community would expect, and we would expect to provide. So in the technology positions, it's virtually impossible to ignore that there simply are needs that go along with the technology. We can't not have the technology. There is so much more that could happen in technology. We're still very modest in the world of that. If we're going to have technology, there's a commensurate maintenance and software licensing and annual upgrades and things that go along with that.
Okay, so if maybe I could, just not to change your train of thought, but since you're dealing with that issue, I want to speak to something you said about that earlier, and that was that you had a vendor that you were using that was more expensive than bringing in someone to do it. The part I'm having a hard time reconciling with that is that did you consider not only the higher cost, but the fact that the person you bring in is now going to have health costs because they have health insurance, they have PERS costs because they're now an employee, and they have all those other added costs that aren't really talked about when we're bringing somebody on, and that's why we're in the position we are now of $17 million of unfunded liability or $13 million or whatever it is. My point is, yes, it's a higher cost, but did you really think about those other additional costs that I just mentioned?
Yes, Councilmember Brown. Every position that we bring forward to council is fully burdened. That means all of the associated costs with that position are included. So when you see any numbers in here, they include the PERS costs, the health costs, all of the costs that are associated with it are in. So it's the salary plus all of the other burdens, as it's referred to, all the other benefits are included.
I guess what I'm trying to, again, if you hire this person and they're a long-term employee because they're happy and we're happy with them, their costs are going to be, would seem to me, higher than a contracted vendor where we're not doing those things.
Well, the vendors in the world of technology, you have to be very, very specific when you're looking in the for maintenance type positions in the contract world. That maintenance usually is less expensive. When there's routine maintenance positions, it's very hard for us to be competitive. And in the world of technology and in other professional level positions, that's just not the case. It is economical to bring in a technology consultant at times because there is a skill set that you don't need 40 hours a week. And then that's simply the way to do it. Database administrators, for example, that's exactly how they do it because you don't need one 40 hours a week. Database administrator would cost you $250 to $300 an hour for a top-flight database administrator. In this case, we have used a contractor for a period of time. It was a conscious decision to support Walt to see how would that work. And they are very skilled people. There's no complaints about the quality of the work that they do. It's just that contract doesn't go very far in the terms of hours, and that what we have found is that through all the various services that are needed, the technology-based supported services, that's just inadequate. It's inadequate to support WALT. And so our mind actually is that it's not that one person will be suddenly provide a luxurious level of support. There's still a question of one additional person will actually be enough for it. We're banking that it will be, and that's why we're taking much of the contract services and reducing them. In this case, we feel that we'll get more bang for the buck by having it as an in-house person.
Okay, so going on with that whole theme, let's deal with GIS tech for a second. I understand the value of the program and what you're trying to do here, but the thing I can't figure out is it would seem like if you hired someone to bring it up to speed from a vendor perspective as a one-time expense is going to be cheaper than hiring an employee that goes on for years and years and years, because there's only so much updating you can do, and then you're just going to be using the system as is for a while.
This is a good one to have Teresa McClish come in and address. But as she's coming forward, I'd say I have about 20 years of experience in GIS, being involved in a community that was one of the initial communities to embrace the ESRI SRI system. And it is a system that has, while there's a lot of ongoing costs with it, it is one that, in my mind, I'm convinced it is a cost-avoidant investment, because there's simply other things that we're expected to be able to do. That GIS is simply the only application that does it. It's what the world does. The next step in your permitting that you're going to be doing that you simply can't do right now is your development community would like to be able to bring in all their plans that are GIS land-based related. You can't do that now. That's how the private sector is doing it. We as an agency, and many agencies like us, can't do that right now because we simply don't have the GIS and MIS land database associated to do it. It is a constant update. It's not a one-time. It's every time an adjustment or a change in the business community, a new land base, a new land form comes in, they're constant. But it's not just about the database. It's the use of that data. And Ms. McClish can address that.
I'd appreciate that. I'm more concerned about, as Bob said, the ongoing need for someone in that position. I totally understand the use of it, and I know how useful it's been. But after this whole PERS discussion, I'm nervous about putting more and more employees on staff. So I'm trying to figure out, what the justification is there.
And certainly it's been ingrained in our work plans to not add staff, rely on part-time and contract services. As Bob has explained, and indeed in community development, for example, we continue to do that. We have part-time office administrative assistants, part-time planner, and we just juggle around and somebody's sick and we absolutely make do. But looking for the biggest bang for the buck in terms of improvements, GIS is certainly what we found to be the one that floated to the top by far. And this is because indeed it started off as Councilman Guthrie has indicated, is it a kind of a want or a need? It started off years ago as a pretty neat tool. People started going, oh, this is a pretty neat tool. You can do a lot of stuff with this. And it has as many things in the technological world have done and showed us, it's just evolved very rapidly, and it is indeed an industry standard and not only residing in one department, as been explained, all facets of city work. So the proposal is to impact 25% of the position with the general fund and to offset it with a fee so it's stabilized over time. And in terms of what we get out of that, it's we probably don't even know everything right today, what we're going how we're going to benefit from this particular position. Bob has explained the development review scenario, and it's that's certainly going to be a huge impact, and thereby be an impact for economic development as well. For example, can we just get it updated and hands off for a while? Well, we've been doing that. We've been trying to do that over the last several years, where we'll have somebody come in and do some updates, and then we'll, you know, hold tight for a while. And so we know how well that doesn't work. For example, we've updated our water systems master plan. Great update. Have it done. We have all the things we need to do forecasted for years to come with our water system. It's all GIS'd up to date, and it's handed to us. And every time we maintain that system, every time we do a capital project that has to do with that system, that GIS layer is becoming more and more out of date. So it's just a constant dedication that we need to have, and that's why we feel it's a priority to bring forward to you. And things just the other day, we wanted to evaluate a potential fuel modification project. So we looked at 41 parcels, a portion of 41 parcels, and immediately I just got that data from our current temporary contract person, and it's just a very valuable tool. But these people, if you can't keep them in house, they're going to leave, and we don't have that continuity of data available to us, and we have to start again every time. So,
thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Please.
Sure. So I get that it's slowly going out of date, but I guess I would emphasize slowly going out of date. We don't do that many capital projects, you know, in water projects in a year or whatever. So I think it still sort of applies here, that once it is up to date, yes, it is slowly going out of date, and maybe you need to, you know, to bring in somebody every 6 months, but you're going to have somebody every day.
Certainly, and so that's one small part of our GIS need, is updating our water system work plan. So we have that in our parcel data. We have, needs, you know, in terms of traffic accident data, our circulation needs. It can help us analyze that. It can help us with our crime tracking. So all of these are a constant evolution and need to utilize that system.
Chief, about crime tracking in a minute, but I guess the other half of that is, in my mind, GIS becomes like Excel. Is, you know, everybody should just really know how to do it. Not everybody does, but they should. And you have 3 full-time planners, we have engineers, we have a whole group of people that from an extraction standpoint, at minimum, should absolutely know how to do all of this stuff, or we should be training them to do it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that one of my questions here is that the way the staff, or the paragraph, half of a paragraph read, is that there's a certain, struck me as maybe a significant amount of time as extracting pictures for a planning commission, or extracting, you know, particular parcel data as you related for it just seems to me that that's the kind of thing that we should have intrinsic with our staff as it is. And yeah, it takes some time, but it's like Excel. Once you're doing it, once you've built it, it's pretty quick. So I'm wondering, from that standpoint, what's sort of the long term vision of that? And I'm kind of relating it back to when we did the information services, where we had to scan all of our past documents. Yeah, they're certainly ongoing. There's plenty of documents getting put in there every week, but it seems to me we should be doing that much more simply than having somebody just dedicated exclusively to that. And I certainly see its value. To be able to know where a water pipe is pretty handy when the water's flowing. But so I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more specifically on sort of the operational, why we have to have somebody for operational.
Well, I would suggest that we all access that. So this ties to GIS. GIS needs is both a labor and a software need. So, you know, we've been very frugal with our license, and we do have it available on one on one computer. We're trying to address that with this budget as well. So in terms of everybody accessing it and everybody using it, we have a little ways to go. We'll get it more available with this proposal. And indeed, then staff can utilize it, a little more widely in-house, and we'll be doing that. But as with Excel, a lot of people know a lot about Excel, and then there's those who really know and can use the full power of Excel. For example, it's extraordinarily powerful tool for those who have been, who are those who are just specialists at it. And to really get your bang for the buck, so to speak, and use it for, you're looking at, business opportunity sites or where fiber optics should go, or utilizing it to look at potential for recycled water infrastructure. Some of these bigger initiatives, it's going to be very handy, certainly and crucial indeed for it to have a specialist on board right there and available, along with the other maintenance and data needs.
Just one last one. This has to do with the nexus with the fee. So we have a developer coming in, and we're going to – and so one I have – first question is what kinds of – I think building permits would have a fee. I'm sure development would. If we were to go out and ask plumbers if they thought GIS was valuable to them, since we're going to add it to their permit fee, are they going to say yes, it is?
Well, in terms of folks wanting to be able to locate infrastructure that's been, where we receive as-builts and we need to put them into a spatial system, it's going to be very valuable. And over time, again, it's part of the fabric of the infrastructure for the city, and then knowing when that was put in and where that is located becomes a very, very valuable tool. And the type of fee really will have to be investigated when we do the fee study, which is just getting kicked off. So we'll look and make sure that it's a proportional and an appropriate fee. But it is commonly assessed. Those building permits come in. Those as-builts are given at the very end. They're put into the system. And, we're constantly now scanning those in and archiving those, and to tie those spatially will be very valuable.
All right, thank you.
If I can comment on that, too, there is a – we were actually talking about this the other day. There's a hazard in overselling GIS because it's so easy to do, because the capabilities of it are virtually limitless. And so there is almost a hesitation talking about it because, from one standpoint, it almost sounds too good to be true. And that part, it's too good to be true at a cost. There's a hesitancy. I hope I can make this make sense. There's a hesitancy to talk about the capabilities of it because it's enormous. And it is not about a static system. What brought this all up was your question about the plumber. The answer is a definite yes, depending upon the sophistication of the plumber and what you've done over on the permit side. The GIS is simply the foundation for all of these modules. In fact, if you have the company that you use here, by the way, is simply the best one. It's the only one you would want to invest a dollar into, from my perspective. And you have a GIS MIS system of which you lay then modules on top of. The crime system is a module that lays on top of it that uses all of this data. It's extremely complex to set up. It's nothing that the chief or his staff could do. And there it takes somebody to make all these linkages that are just unbelievably complex for whatever reason a system like this needs to be. One of the modules is an inspection module. And again, this is where we don't want to oversell it because it starts sounding science fiction, but it's exactly what's happening in a lot of the private sector for sure, and a lot of public sector, where the GIS system resident back at this office with now a permitting system where all of the applications and all the plans that have come in have all been brought in electronically. They're resident in the system down on the parcel level data. So when the inspector, when the plumber goes out to it, or the electrician or any of the tradespeople go out, they actually have a a work duty laptop that accesses all the information back to see what previous permits were issued, where the connections were the sewer line connections, all the things that they would be running back and forth to be able to do, to have it right on site as long as the GIS system is up to date. When the inspector goes out, the inspections simply become so much more effective because, one, the inspection request has gone through the system, it's interrogated by the system, it's put into a logical sequence, and the inspector can go out and see what other trade inspectors were already there and what time were there and what their comments were and if he can approve something or not. It's a tremendous, just practical application that allows an inspector's load to go from perhaps 10 to 15 inspections a day to 15 to 20 inspections a day. It's simply more effective for them to be able to do it. On the other side, that's not something simple to do. It's a significant investment to do it, and it takes a core person who understands the whole database to be able to make these modules work onto it. It's even difficult to bring in. There's all different ways of how you can set it up. There's no one way. And when you have one consultant and another come in, another come in, the first thing they want to do is go undo much of the work of the other one, because that's not how they learned it. And that's not how. There's so many different ways to set up a database. And so the consistency of that person making that linkage in the long run is a lot of money saved from not having to reevaluate the methodology that the previous person used. So it's a long term, and sometimes it's hard to put an exact caliper on that benefit. It is ultimately about services.
Can we try one caliper on when our inspection fees go down?
Pardon, I'm sorry.
When our inspection fees go down because we're able to do more inspection?
We'll probably maintain them or make them up so that we can afford the system. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
What it does is it hopefully precludes us having to hire another inspector. Makes them more efficient.
Can you do me a favor and put up the, thanks, Teresa. I think you actually convinced me. Can you put up the fee slide? So the thing I understand the animal fee, and I understand the technology fee, and I understand the women club's fee. What I'm just philosophically against, I think, is the general plan update fee. And it gets back down to a couple of things that come to my mind. I was around when we did the 2001 general plan, and we weren't asking for a fee back then. We have a pretty good general plan in place. It needs to be tweaked. Obviously, legally, it has to be tweaked. To me, that's part and parcel of doing city business, is we have to have a general plan. And so when we call it an unfunded need, again, my question becomes back down to priorities. Why aren't we spending, rather than layer another fee on top of developers, is really what you're saying, why aren't we using some of this new revenue that we've found to go towards covering the cost of the general plan? Because that's a basic part of city business. It's just basic. It has to be done. It's required. It's not done all that often. Why aren't we scheduling revenue, particularly now that we have revenue increases, to cover that so that we don't get developers coming to us and saying, oh, my God, here's another government entity throwing more fees on us? It just doesn't make sense to me. So I'd like to see some justification as to why we're not using revenues we already have to cover that expense.
Councilmember Brown, members of the council, There is no doubt staff's preference would be that we didn't have to request a fee for that. It is exactly, in fact, what the community development director has been attempting to do in the past and has gotten little bits and pieces of it, but it keeps not being quite as urgent as other needs are. And fees, unfortunately, as a result of a whole variety of revenue structural revenue changes that have taken place, the fees and revenues that used to be received it is more challenging to continue providing the same level of service. It wasn't that many years ago. You probably had an extremely robust recreation program that had after-school sports and all kinds of free programs, carom boards that were set up in every park and all that simply don't exist any longer because the revenue structures have changed. And the programs that are provided now are ones that John Rogers has been able to accomplish through the charging of fees. May not be an exact analogy, but that's what's happening in a whole variety of other areas. It certainly is a matter of council priority that if council believes that is a basic service and we need to figure out how to do it without assessing a fee to it, then that's exactly what we would do. We are just in search of what have become industry standard fees to provide for some of the services that are very expensive, and this is what the municipal industry has really found themselves, not just in AG but in other locations, going to is a small incremental fee that builds up over a period of time to provide for the general plan.
I appreciate your explanation, but just as a little bit of pushback, I would say, if you go out and talk to any developer that's coming through, and I've talked to a lot of them, and I actually worked for one for a year, those little fees add up after a while, and they're a cost of doing business that they end up having to pass on to the consumer, and so ultimately the consumers of Arroyo Grande end up paying the cost. So I understand that we just and this is government in general. It's like incremental this, incremental that, and pretty soon it's not so incremental. It's a much larger amount than we ever anticipated. Yeah. Whether you're talking about PERS, whether you're talking about the fire authority, it goes from being incremental at the beginning to pretty large as time goes on. So
there's no doubt about it, and there was a lot of discussion about that very thing. When you look, it's like kind of like when you look at your utility bill or your phone bill, and you see all these additional surcharges that are on it, and we're guilty of the same thing.
I wanted to kind of have questions rather than comment, and I think we're getting into comment here. But I do have a follow-up question related to this item. Is how many on a ballpark percentage basis of the development plans that come before the city require a general plan update?
In terms of a general plan update, specifically tied to a development project, we get, probably a couple a year. They're requesting a modification in the general plan just to do their development. And we're limited in terms of how many of those we can do per year. We can only do four affecting any one element, according to state law. The fee we're suggesting would be probably, it's not going to help us now in this current general plan update effort over the next few years, but we would look for it to help us for the next one down the road and allow that to build up and be a revenue source. Our general plan elements include our housing element, for example. We have to do that one every 5 years. Generally, and that's us looking at where we're going to accommodate additional housing over the next forecasted time period, and that's goes directly to those folks who want to construct housing in the next forecasted time period. So as you've recognized, we have to do it. We certainly have to have a blueprint for growth. We have to know where we're going to fit those houses, where we're going to fit those roads, how that circulation is going to work to serve those houses, etc. Circulation element, our land use element, how those land uses are going to integrate, and so it is directly. It does directly serve each time we allow development in the city, each time those permits are allowed, consistent with our general plan, that nexus is there. And, of course, that will be clearly ferreted out in the fee study as well. But that's the intent, is to charge a little bit, a modest fee, on those development applications to ensure continued development over time.
Would it be reasonable to charge a greater fee, perhaps, for development that comes in requiring a general plan amendment?
Certainly. Our general plan amendment fee is not changed much, except for minor escalation in a number of years, and that will be also looked at in our fee study for services.
Thank you.
Maybe follow up with Chris?
If you have a thought, do you have any?
It's related to the general plan.
Well, on this subject,
yeah. Teresa. Well, Teresa, I mean, I think you said it, and I think you understood it, but I just want to clarify: the fee would not be just for general plan updates; it would be for anyone coming through the city for any sort of development application.
Correct. Because every development application has to be consistent with our general plan. That's over the wide variety of elements.
All set. So if we have a fee study that's coming up, do we know, and this might be for Teresa or for Debbie, do we know if, I guess where I'm coming from is I'm struggling with the general plan update fee for some of the reasons that have already been discussed. So if we're already doing a fee study, is it possible based on the fact that there hasn't been one done in a number of years, and we now know because we have a general trend upward related to development, the permitting and things like that, all of that we know is increasing. So wouldn't it be possible that the fee study would then support increases to already existing fees with a justification for those based on trends and quite frankly, whatever the dynamics are involved in the fee study. So if that is what could happen, then wouldn't it be more prudent to kind of wait on that to see if maybe there's some offset that is built in to the study that we already know is coming that might be able to be an option instead of creating a new fee? Was that a question? That was a question, right? Not a comment. That was a question.
I can start, and Debbie will polish it greatly, I'm sure. The reason why we're suggesting this very specific fee now in regards to the budget discussion is in wanting to generate some revenue and place it safely for the general plan update. And our revenue gained from our fees for services goes into the general fund pot. So this would be to specify it as a general plan for general plan update purposes, and beyond that, I look to Debbie to.
Yeah, we can certainly, when we do review all of our fees, we can look at what has changed over time since the last update, how that may generate additional revenue, and it could be at the council's discretion to earmark some of those funds for a general plan update. We wouldn't necessarily need to adopt a specific general plan update fee in order to do that. That would be something that we could bring back when we talk more specifically about the fee study, the results of the fee study, if council is generally unsupportive of this concept, then we won't pursue it, and we will bring other alternatives to you to consider how we could fund a general plan updates.
And then with that, we know that by law we need a general plan, but are there any penalties imposed by the state if a comprehensive general plan doesn't occur? What are those impacts if we defer it just because we just don't have the money to do it? And then lastly, is it more efficient or cost-effective to chisel them off one at a time based on need?
In terms of specific penalties, monetary penalties imposed by the state, there's none at this time. And we do get the letters from the state.
Nasty grams.
But where we see the problems is when we try to apply for grants, because they'll look for compliance or general plan that's current, and so we would be perhaps precluded from some grant efforts, and we're all about going for grants these days. And more than that, the problem comes, as you know, if we have an outdated plan and we're trying to do our daily business and make our decisions based on that outdated plan, then we get into to some real trouble. And in terms of efficiencies and how to go about an update, well, the dream is we get a comprehensive update, big pot of money, we get it all done, we do all this community outreach, we have all these, you know, workshops, and we understand perfectly the community needs, and we update all the elements at once. However, that's just a lot of communities do this. They spend a tremendous amount of money doing this and a tremendous effort. As in looking at our budget, this is certainly not what we're proposing. We do have a good plan in place. It does need some continually updates, and we are attacking that element by element. That's kind of the way we're doing it.
Can you give me an example of is there a city in our county that's currently working on a comprehensive plan for a general plan update?
I do know that San Luis is actually spending over $1 million, I believe, just on one element. So you can see the types.
Well, thank you for that.
Okay.
Moving on. Next question.
They did get a grant for that.
They got a grant. Okay. Very good.
No, thank you. Okay.
Jim,
my primary question. My secondary question is: so it's every 10 years as a general plan, as I remember. What are you looking to collect over 10 years? What kind of number are you talking about? $1 million, or are you talking about? I think the last one's $350. Granted. 15 years ago.
Well, it will depend on what the fee study would analyze and suggest as an appropriate fee that would be proportional to collect.
We don't have a number
per development. I don't have a exact. It would be less than that, though.
Is Teresa, isn't the industry standard? Is this a new fee that cities are imposing? Is it one that some cities in the county already use?
I'm not sure about all the cities in our particular county. I do know it's a common fee. A lot of cities have it. A lot of cities have had it for a number of years.
I wanted to know. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Quite a number.
Okay, it's coming in on 8:30, so we've been at it a couple hours already. Let's take a break until 8:30, and we'll try to resume at 8:30 sharp. Okay, coming back from the break, we're in council questions on the proposed budget. Councilmember Brown, do you have any
more? No more for me, thank you.
Councilmember Harmon.
Mic on? Check. Okay. So I think the majority of my questions have been answered. That's the good news. I still feel like I need a little clarification, Mr. McFaul, related to this $250,000 set aside. you indicated, I just need the review on what the plan is for, is the $250 going to just be set aside and as things come up, it's going to be plugged in? Mm-hmm. Is it part of that wonderful economic development plan that you listed? May I have some clarification?
I'd be happy to address that again. The $250,000, first to clarify, it isn't a set-aside. The $250,000 is being suggested as one of the parts of the revenue of the general fund revenue that would become a part of the total revenue to be part of what is dispersed between all of the general fund expenses. So it's just like property tax like sales tax or the other revenue components of the general fund. It's just to become one of the revenue components. It isn't specifically for any one item. It just adds to the bottom line. So the question is, why are we doing that? We're trying to staff, and we actually huddled real quickly out there just to see how are we doing in our presentation. And our bottom line is, without sounding like we're complaining, we're struggling to provide some of the services that we're doing and that we want to do and that staff wants to do, and we're having a hard time doing it. That's really the bottom line for them. And in looking at the things that we see that are absolute priorities that we need to do, things that we need to add back from significant reductions that happened during the recession, when the long-range financial plan was put together 6 months ago, we kind of thought, you know, it looks like there's going to be enough money to do the kinds of things that we're proposing tonight. And then we got the PERS bill, and then we got the JPI bill, and we got the other adjustments that simply used all that money up and left no discretion for us to be able to address the things that are, I think Jeff said it right now really well, that are efficiency multipliers. And staff sees, like, for example, the technical staff, whether it be the GIS technician or the maintenance worker, as an efficiency multiplier. We simply will be able to do more of the things better. We'll be able to have reasonable schedules and use staff for what they're intended to. The problem is, because of some of the previous city manager and Debbie and council had worked really hard on coming up with a reduction schedule in the past looked forward to the future to have enough money to be able to do that, and it just didn't work out. I mean, the PERS being the single most significant change to that. So it's, then how do you get some additional money so that we can, if nothing else, maintain the services and begin to address the areas that we feel are really critical? And there's just limitations on how we can do that without going back to the community and asking for additional revenues and fees in some way, because we really have that message. That's just not an acceptable. It's not a good alternative. So, knowing that every year, legitimately, on a cash flow basis, based on the revenues and the fees that we receive now, there's always about $325,000 left over. Like I said, that would normally drop down to into the reserves. Since the reserves are relatively healthy, then we're saying, instead of dropping that down, let's just, like we would do on other capital projects, let's just carry 250 of that up. That kind of helps make up for what we really lost unanticipated from the PERS. So it isn't much more complicated than that. It is really just to be able to help us be able to do what we were hoping to be able to do to begin with.
Oh. Just to add to that, there's a couple of reasons why, you know, spending from your reserve is not a good idea, but there's a couple of reasons why I think in this particular case it may be an okay strategy for us to do. For one, for example, we just took in several hundred thousand dollars in planning and inspecting fees for a development that is going to occur, but it is not going to occur before June 30th. So the developer has paid us their fees today, and we won't be inspecting that development until next fiscal year. So we did get the money today. Normally that'll go into our reserve, but we're not going to perform that service until much
later, and in this case, it crosses fiscal year. So to the degree that we got that money and we're going to perform the service later, I think that there is maybe some nexus there between let's carry forward what might, you might otherwise call it, maybe it's unearned revenue. It's revenue that we got today, but we're not really going to perform the service until next year. So normally that would go into reserve and at the end of this fiscal year. But we're suggesting that maybe it doesn't go into reserve. Maybe we just carry that forward in when we perform the services. There's a little bit of a better match. We also do anticipate that a lot of these economic development activities that we're going to be putting a lot of effort into are going to pay off, but they're not going to pay off overnight. And so we need a bridge to get us from where we are today to where we see the city and the situation in 3, 5, 7 years from now. If we're going to attract a new hotel or new businesses or new things to our city, there's stuff we have to do today to make that happen. And it will pay off for us in the future. So, again, we just need a little time and investment today that we think to bridge us into that next level of economic development activity that is where we need to get for revenues to sustain our long-term, even just our current modest service levels to the community. I think those are both good reasons why using this reserve or using the unspent appropriation doesn't make me terribly uncomfortable.
And again, emphasizing that the PERS and the changes to PERS and the requirements that are now on each of the cities, that's really the big shock for our budget and the adjustments that needed to be made. I think it's about $300,000 hit that wasn't anticipated. We were anticipating because we knew the changes, but now that we have the amount, that is also what's causing a little bit of this request for the shifting. Otherwise, we'd be pretty much okay.
Correct.
Thank you. I'm done.
And also, it's why Ms. Malicott did a great job explaining it. It's why we're only suggesting it for a three-year period of time, not as a permanent adjustment, but to allow these other mechanisms, hopefully the capital, the economic development program to kick in and other things to happen so that that would return back to the way it's always been traditionally handled.
Yes, well done, Ms. Malicott. Well done. That's all.
Okay, most of my questions have been asked except for one, and that is I look at the IT specialist, which I certainly recognize the need for that. I look at the GIS technical position, and I recognize the need there. My question is, can we leverage that position into one person? And
the skill sets of those two positions are entirely different, actually. I mean, there's little bits and pieces of overlap. The GIS person is not a network administrator or desktop person, the kind of individual that this organization is really looking for. Our GIS person will actually be a person who is has a degree. It's such a complex, specialized area. It's actually a person that is highly specialized in just GIS. There's really very little overlap.
Can I add something?
Sure.
And I just for some history, we actually had somewhat of a scenario that kind of was a combined position. We had a planner in the past, a former planner who served actually as our webmaster for a number of years when we had our website in-house. And he was our GIS person, but that's a good example of the challenges that we're facing because he was a planner, and so he was trying to do both jobs and keep the system up to date. But he was also, at one time, we had funded like a quarter of his position, even as a planner, into IT. So these are things that we have attempted in the past to try and address the needs, but it wasn't very successful. The funding, he was supposed to spend 25% of his time helping Walt and doing some IT-related support on, like, desktop issues, and the time just wasn't there. He could, in a pinch, assist somebody at City Hall, but he didn't have the ability to go out to our other field locations, the yard or the PD. And so
Just a little bit of background in that those are things that we have tried to attempt in the past, trying to cover these services.
Interestingly enough, on a professional basis, GIS is very closely associated with planning. Actually, many planners are the ones who have strong GIS skills, and in some cases, engineers have them. But the regular IT people, it's rarely supervised by IT people. It's usually supervised by either the engineering department or the planning department. It's a whole spatial space. It's just a different skill set.
That is pretty much the only question I had left over. So at, I guess, go ahead, Jim.
We have the chief just come because I didn't get to ask him the question.
Yes, please.
We made tremendous investments in technology in the police department. You're talking about the GIS here. I guess that's some sort of minor minority report type activity. We have the latest software in the patrol vehicles. We're in the police station the tremendous cameras. I guess at what point do we start to see in a community where we're really not seeing the crime rate going up or down? At what point do we start to see some sort of financial payback where we actually see police services be more efficient based on the technology that we're spending money on and now maintaining?
I think you're seeing it now. Right now, the police department's a shadow of what was as little as 8 years ago when I came here as far as the services we provide, both response services and then other services like crime prevention services, neighborhood watch services, DARE, all those programs you remember, they're all gone. And also our staffing levels are reduced, even on our response personnel. We have a position that was considered in the budget but not moved ahead, and I could easily argue passionately for that position. But I will tell you that my first priorities are not in the police department. It's the IT position and the GIS position, because everything we do is IT-related. And so you're asking, when do we get that benefit? We are getting it now. The problem is, just today, and to bring it down to real world, just today, Walt, was our IT person, was over at our building, and I gave him six different things that we needed to have done, try to get done today. In addition to that, he was working on projects at City Hall. Even our phone systems are now, obviously, IP phone systems. So I believe we're getting those efficiencies right now. The next step is really, one, to keep the things we have running, and that was part of those six things that Walt had today to try to do. And the GIS is to allow the police department to be much more efficient in where we send our personnel. But we all remember the old police shows where there was check your pin maps and hit the streets. GIS is the pin map of today. We don't even have people to do pin maps anymore. Those people are long gone. We used to have cadets that did that. And so for the officers that go out into the field, whether it's traffic officers or just handling calls where our burglaries are occurring, because we still have quite a high property crime rate in the Rio Grande for a lot of reasons, we need to know where that is so we focus our energies right on those areas. Free patrolling without any information is just really not part of what they call now the Smart Policing Initiative. So I think we're getting it right now. We just need to be able to maintain it and go to that next level.
Thank you.
Chief, are you seeing difficulty in attracting and retention of staff, especially in the patrol ranks? Are we starting to see potential problems there?
We do have some quite a bit of issues on recruitment and retention. We currently have two vacancies. We're anticipating at least two more people leaving. It's not that they're not satisfied or happy with the department. It just comes down to economics. Many of our neighbors, including the county, provide for a much better package. And for some of these, especially younger officers, are starting their lives and trying to get a home here on the Central Coast. That matters. We constantly do recruiting. We're very picky about our recruiting, but even with that, with the changes in the PERS, without getting off topic too much, our lateral entry people that are already officers somewhere else coming here have really dried up because people will not leave if it risks changing what their current pension plan is. And so now we're traveling much further distances to try to recruit from the Valley area out far outside the Central Coast to bring people in. But we do have a very high cost of living. So, yes, it's something we're going to have to address at some point, and we're feeling it right now.
Well, that's something I hope we can address in the immediate term. Thank you. I guess another question's come to mind about because this is the general fund budget in cost of fire service. I understand that the fire authority is paying for rent on one of the fire stations, and I wondered if that's commonly the case, or maybe if we could address that, and if it seems to be that if we're seeing additional facility costs like that, that possibly we need to look at, and I think since we've been around for 5 years, we might start having to look at things like 3 stations, 2 stations, what can we ultimately afford, and what gives us the most efficient services for the entire jurisdictional community of the fire authority.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. Mayor, as I talked about 2 evenings ago, one of the goals in the next budget year with board direction is to really evaluate the JPA. You're right, it's been 5 years. It's time to reopen that and look at the components, not only of the allocation formula, but as to what was the basis and the foundation that the JPA was created for. You're right, there are some financial items within the JPA agreement that we need to look at in whole. So there's 4 components of the allocation formula that need to be revisited. And then things such as, you mentioned, fire station rent, administrative services, supports. Between the board and the executive team, we plan on dissecting the JPA and really having a full disclosure discussion in the next year.
And in terms of, are we carefully itemizing costs on those types of items so we can make informed decisions when it comes to that point?
That's the intention, as we take the JPA into its components to actually lay out the costs and the numbers to put it all together and have that open discussion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, with that, council seems to have asked all the questions we have. Is there public comment on the proposed budget at this time?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I had to leave Tuesday night, so some of this might go back to that. I'm troubled by the survey, Judith, being presented Tuesday night to the council. It showed only 97 people who lived in Arroyo Grande and 57 business owners of Arroyo Grande. I think we have more than 75 businesses in Arroyo Grande, but maybe that is all that care to join the Chamber of Commerce. And I'm not really sure what the Chamber of Commerce had to do with the fire authority. It seemed that a council member asked them to be here, and I thought the council was here to represent the public first and foremost. My brother is a retired police officer, and he says the fire department, at least in Northern California, does not make what the fire department makes, because police have so many liabilities and they can be sued left and right. Not so with the fire department. So maybe we need another battalion chief. But to compare the reserves with the police reserves and what they make, I feel is apples to oranges. I just don't see where we have 17-20% raise to give the fire reserves, unfortunately, right now. Both of these agencies are vital to our community, and I support both. But they are not the same in the jobs they do. We pay firemen for sleeping, not so with police. I don't know of a single firefighter who has been sued for excessive force, but you see it every day in the news now. And kudos to our fire, to our police department for never having those charges levied against them. Good job, and keep up the good work. I've asked before, and I will ask again, for a bid from CAL FIRE. I think we deserve to know, are we paying less, the same, or more if we brought CAL FIRE on? I see no harm at all in just getting a bid. I fully understand we only pay 45% currently to the five city or the GPA, but what is going to happen if Oceano cannot pick up their portion next year? This is a complex issue, no doubt, and I don't have the answer. I'm also wondering, what are the conditions of the Grover Beach Fire Building and the Oceano? I know that recently we did a remodel on Arroyo Grande, so again, are the funds there for those departments if they have deficiencies? I like our fire department and our police, don't get me wrong. We either have the money or we don't. There's a difference between a want and a need, and I don't think we need to give our fire reserves a raise at the present time. I don't want to lose employees right now, and we are losing police officers, not reserves, fully trained police officers because of wages. Maybe I'm partial, but I have insurance on my house in case a fire burns down, and I understand the fire department does a whole lot more than just protecting in fires. But I also need the police if chaos breaks out. So thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time?
Good evening, council and staff. Beatrice Spencer from Arroyo Grande. I have just a couple comments and a couple questions that hopefully can be answered. First of all, I was a little bit taken aback by the fact that now we're learning that we pay rent on one building, and yet I was under the assumption we had three. So I'd like to know which building the FCFA is paying rent on and maybe how much that is. But my main concern is, of course, the fact that the percentages were never correctly applied. And I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if we'll ever get an answer to that. But Arroyo Grande has been the administrator since the inception of the FCFA, so we should have some answers for that. We recently learned, much to our dismay, that applying the formula correctly now results in an additional expense to Arroyo Grande in excess of $100,000 just this year. Since this is a sizable adjustment, Oceano is now requesting that we go back and take a look at past years and have those recalculated. We can assume that this is to determine if Oceano has been overcharged and Arroyo Grande has been overpaid. If so, the amount is determined significant enough to request a refund, that needs to be included in our budget as well. And I have some questions about the FCFA billing for Arroyo Grande admin time. Page 101 of your budget shows that Arroyo Grande receives basically a $22,500 credit for admin charges, and I would just like to know, does this accurately reflect the hours spent by Arroyo Grande staff for FCFA matters, or is this based on a formula? Because we've also learned now the initial formulas were off. Now we have a 72% increase in dispatch because of an undercalculated formula. So does the 22.5 really account for our admin fees? Does that amount fluctuate every year, or is it significantly change from year to year? And does that amount include the PERS liability and other or all benefits associated with the department's billable hours? I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Clearly, I think some discussions need to take place, and I think the chief is aware of those. Is there other public comment on the proposed budget?
Otis Page at 606 Meadow Street. Your transfer of fund revenue calculation is 15%, my calculation is 10%, or the majority of that is water revenue billing. Okay? I've talked to Debbie about this one time. When discussing this with Steve Adams, he insisted that the transfer was not a profit. That is, the issue of your revenue on water minus the cost of for the water indicated a very significant profit, very significant. In fact, if you say, figure that if of the transfer fund, if 10% is water, that's 10% of your general fund. Okay? I'm not saying that's evil. I'd just like to see that accounted that way as a part of your revenue stream. Because you understand you've increased prices on water because of the drought, and therefore the consumption is going to go down slightly. It's gone down, I think, right, 3%. All right? But when it rains again, there is no date certain where you're going to reduce the prices. Okay? Therefore, that fund could be jeopardized in the future. Not now. All right? So that's one comment. Regarding the fire authority, I'd like to make it very clear. The first obligation this council has is to make sure our police and firemen are adequately compensated for and taken care of. Security for us is very important for a city that's bisected by 101. Okay? Very important. Now, in that context, in talking to John Schultz the other day, after the last meeting, I made it very clear to him, the important virtue of a CAL FIRE comparison is to see how much better that could make the present fire authority. That may show you that they're more expensive because of certain things that would improve the fire authority if you would consider that budget. So there could be a very positive for the fire authority and for the city, particularly Arroyo Grande, for that. My last point is this. The calculation on the formula says that the city has 51% of the incidents, all right? Yet the formula boosts from 45 to 48. When will it go to 51? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
Mayor Hill, with all due respect, I was here the other night on Tuesday night in support of the Five Cities Fire Authority. And after a lot of thought and consideration.
Excuse me, can I get your name for the record?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Tracy Corley, Arroyo Grande.
Thank you.
I believe your actions towards my public comment were out of line, and then I'm due an apology for that. I was cut off mid-sentence and not allowed to finish.
I apologize for cutting you off. If that's what happened, I'm sorry, I don't remember the incident, but you'll recall the need for 2 minutes, which I think we have tonight. But if I cut you off, I apologize for that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I most certainly don't want to take up your time with everything everybody has said in support of the Five Cities Fire. I don't need to recap that. But, you know, my support as well goes to them. Our top priority as a community should be our emergency response system. They, you know, the police officers, the firemen. It just seems there's a disconnect when it comes to the Five Cities Fire Department. And, you know, it just seems we would want to put that at the top of the list of what they need, not what they want. These are not wants. These are needs that our community to be safe. So I just wanted to give my opinion on that. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment?
Hi, Patrick Irie from Arroyo Grande. I sent you all an email. I wasn't able to be here Tuesday, but I just wanted to reiterate some of those comments about the reserves' wages. If you're willing to pay them minimum wage to put their lives on the line, that's a slap in the face to them. I believe they do deserve a wage increase. If they get hurt here on this job, they're not going to be able to work their other jobs. In regards to a CAL FIRE contract, if you're willing to pay more for CAL FIRE, you should be willing to pay these guys more to do the job that they're doing now and be able to do it better. I support any increases that they're asking for and ask that you approve them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? One more.
Hello, Jeanette Serby, 1134 Ash Street. I'm married to one of the firefighters for Five Cities Fire Authority, but I don't want to speak as the wife of one of the firefighters. I want to speak as an ex-firefighter myself. I was a firefighter for 6 years. I'm also a veteran of the armed forces, and I'm a paramedic for American Medical Response. So I'm not going to talk to you about what the fire department needs or wants from a wife's perspective. I'm going to talk to you from my own personal experiences. And the firefighter has to have, they have to have enough people on their engines so they can do the two in, two out on fires. It's a safety concern. And the reserves are absolutely necessary, and you're not going to be able to retain that staffing if you don't pay them a livable wage. The fire engines that are 20 years old, I mean, that's a safety thing, too. You have to replace fire engines that are 20 years old. As far as the CAL FIRE thing, I don't even understand where that's coming from. I've worked in emergency services for 15 years in various counties, and I have personal experience with many fire departments. And bigger does not necessarily mean better. Just because you bring the state in doesn't mean you're going to get a better service. Pismo Beach is 8,000 people. They're paying over $2 million for their CAL FIRE fire service, and that's not including the weed abatement and lifeguards. We're paying $1,500,000 for our fire authority, and we have local control, and I think that's the way to go. And I think it's very insulting that people keep getting up here and saying, oh, let's just bring in CAL FIRE. I think that's rude. I think our guys do a good job. I've heard from people that have had fires and heart attacks that they're happy with the service. I don't know why it keeps being brought up that we should go with someone else. So I just want to say, as a voter, as a mother, as a wife, and as a firefighter, and a veteran, that I'm fully in support of the Five Cities Fire Authority.
Thank you. You may have missed my comment the other night that I was confused by the number of comments relating to that, because there's nothing on our agenda anywhere to consider CAL FIRE. So I'm puzzled by the outpouring of comments as if we were considering that. Is there any other public comment? Hearing none. Comments from the council.
Do you want to go, Jim, or John?
Either way. Ladies first.
Let's start with Councilmember Harmon.
Thank you, Mr. Guthrie. Councilmember Guthrie. All right. Let's see. Now I just have to find all of my notes. Okay. So I appreciate the more detailed...
Oh, all done, Barbara.
Okay. Yay. And then, therefore, I approve nothing on the budget. Okay. Are we ready? Just do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Okay. So, all right, I'm focused again. It's hard. Ms. Malakut, I really appreciate, and also Mr. McFaul, the more information related to that $250,000. It's new on the budget. I think that it was very cautiously and very thoroughly thought out related to not only the purpose for it, but kind of... All right, maybe ingenious is a little bit too much, but just to be able to think out of the box in trying to get all of the needs met with the limited resources that we have. So in regard to that $250,000, I would support that action. I would like to keep a close monitoring on it as uses are identified, and that you can keep us informed related to that, just because it's a new line item and the purpose. Excellent job recognizing the $126,000 in the line item reductions. I commend all of the department heads for not only working as a team for the mutual good and the benefit of our city, but to be able to keep chiseling away at those line item reductions, but I don't know that $5,000 from the city council budget. All right, I'll let that pass. It's all right. It's okay. But seriously, the dog impound fee, I think I've already discussed that. I can support that. I really like the fact that we're tailoring it. We're using the county fees as kind of like a idea that we can then mold to fit what's specific to our city. I'm very reluctant to, it's always good to go elsewhere to kind of get a framework, but then very important to bring it back and very much curtail it to exactly how it fits our city best. So green light go on the dog pound fee. I do oppose the technology fee, and I think it has to do, I understand the justification for it, but I think it just has to do with, again, tacking on just another little piece to the building permits. I really feel that it's the system's response, the city's responsibility is really the one that needs to take the lead to provide that service. I don't think it should be passed on to developers, because we all know what happens when things get passed on. Then it gets passed on further, and ultimately it could be the consumer. And it may actually impede the economic goals that we're trying to achieve. I would support the RFP process, certainly for the consistency in security services for the Women's Club. That just makes sense, especially if it may result in a lower rate, which we could then, that would be a very nice thing to pass on to our consumers and our renters, actually a lower rate and not a higher rate. That would also equate to perhaps more rentals of the city facility, and also make it a little easier for people. I know when I've heard when people go in and want to, oh, well, we'll just rent the Women's Club, and then they realize exactly all the responsibilities they have. This might be one thing that could streamline that process, and again, more user-friendly, increased rentals, more cost savings, and more revenue coming in. This goes back to the general plan update fee. I think I already kind of indicated that I have a hard time with approving this. I would like to see what the fee studies are first to see if any of those warrant and justify increases on the permitting fees and things like that we already have in place. Again, I really think that this is the city's responsibility. It's one of those, as you all know, my favorite thing is an unfunded state mandate. So I know that we all struggle with those because we still have to do them. So I think it's our responsibility as a city to come up with the best plan to pay for them within our means, instead of, again, passing on another fee to building permits or plan checks related to that. This goes to the I'm very pleased about the economic development plan. Please sign me up for, wait a minute, I need to quote it. Has to do with the involvement of elected officials in business attraction and development strike team. Sign me up. It's on the record, so now I have to step up to the plate. But I really think that this is such a key thing. I love the fact that you're doing the ripple effect. You're not going to have one point person. Every single department is going to be, including City Council, is going to be involved in our economic development and promoting businesses. I would suggest maybe just kind of throwing this out as far as an incentive program for staff. So let's say staff just through word of mouth, or they're at a coffee shop or whatever, and people approach them. If they actually bring a project in, or hold its hand, or I don't know, birth it, or you know, like as far as those things take such a long time to actually get to fruition, is there an incentive program like a extra vacation day or something that could be folded into that economic develop plan? To really kind of entice them to just shift the paradigm that they too are part of this very important process for us. Let's see, going down the list, the IT specialists, I know I've struggled with the added staffing that are proposed. I feel that this is clearly necessary. We need to make sure not only our city is up in the 21st century, that it is also current and continue to be competitive with IT needs. GIS position makes sense to me for the efficiencies. It will aid in economic development, and of course the GIS software would need to go with that. So I can support that. The plan for the volunteer coordinator, rec coordinator, is supported given the anticipated revenue gained from the programs to offset the position costs. I also like the fact that it could revolve into freeing up full-time staff to their priorities instead of having to do some maybe more menial, less specialized things that volunteers could do. The GASB is a necessary evil required for unfunded mandated reporting. Again, my favorite thing. And then with the reclass of the two public works supervisors and the office assistant, those are net zero increases to the general fund expenditures. Since the cost of the park maintenance worker position will also be directly offset by reduction in the contract services, I would support that recommendation. I guess, like I said, I'm very cautious when, especially because we are at the point where we are, you know, seeing revenue, seeing the opportunity to add back. I like the approach that, yes, we're adding back, but we're doing so very cautiously. So I think because of the approach that was done and the very careful approach that was done, I feel a little bit more reassured in moving forward with what the requests are. But I really also in the fact that it'll be, you know, with the economic development program coming in. But the other thing that I really would like to stress and emphasize is that the priorities, and I don't know if this comes would come under the critical action plan, but I really would want to see a specific plan addressing that unfunded liability that we talked about last month. What, even if just a framework on how we're going to start tackling that, it's a very big concern for me, as well as the replacement funds. And I know, I'm sure there's a lot of other things that are coming up on the critical action plan, but those I'd really like to take a look at because those are my priorities. And with that, I'm ready to move forward.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to say that I really struggle with both the fire authority budget and our regular budget. It was a real struggle for me, and I'm not a person that typically struggles with these kind of issues, but it was a push and pull for me for quite a while. I'm nervous and philosophically against the idea that because we now have some additional revenue that we immediately start adding back employees, and the reason for that is we just very specifically identified a large payment to the JPIA that we owe for our insurance pool. We just identified increased PERS costs, which we have no control over. We just identified an additional cost of unfunded liabilities that PERS is going to make us pay. We have a JP or a fire authority that truly is in flux and trying to figure out how to go forwards in a sustainable fashion, which is an unknown right now in terms of how it's going to get done. Are we going to go to some outside fire agency? No. All three cities are in this together, and we're going to get through it, but we've got to figure out how we're going to get through it. So I have, I'm very uncomfortable with the idea that, hey, we've got some extra money, let's do these things. But having said that, Teresa convinced me, I think, on the issue of the GIS person. Jeff explained that his people were revenue neutral, which is, from my perspective, a good thing. So in the end, I'm willing to vote for those recommended changes as long as we at some point look back and make sure that it's still a successful direction that we've gone with these additional employees. Because we do have, we just don't seem to take on the idea of what the extra PERS costs and health costs are. We don't think of that in our mind when we're going forward because that's a long-term expense that
we really don't factor in my view. I know Bob said that we do, but I don't think when we're actually talking about this that we've rounded out the full cost of that over time. We talk about it from a year-to-year basis, so that really concerns me. Regarding the fees, I'm going to say a couple things. I'm totally for the animal impound fee. I think it's a great idea. The GIS fee, again, I think the city owes the residents a certain level of service without tacking on fees. There's a clear cut feeling in a lot of people's minds that government just continues to build its revenue base through fees and doesn't provide just basic services. And I understand that. So I'm against the GIS technological fee. I totally understand the Women's Club Center issue. You want consistency, and it'll negate in other staff time having to deal with the different security and custodial services. So I totally get that. I'm absolutely opposed to the general plan fee. It's our duty, when we know that we have a general plan that has to be done every so many years, to plan for that fee, and that includes using, as was talked about tonight, carryover funds. We have $300,000 a year. We made a mistake, in my humble opinion. If we had $300,000 in carryover fees historically, and we didn't put any of that money aside for general plan updates, that's our mistake. And there's no reason we should pass that mistake on to new development when we're trying to spur development and economic vitality in Arroyo Grande. We need to bite the bullet, and just like any family does when they plan their budget, this is part of something that can be planned for and can be looked at over time, and we should be doing that. And to say that all of a sudden we're just going to do what other cities do, I just don't buy it. We clearly have excess revenue that we could put towards this issue and reduce one fee that we would have to charge. So I know it's a matter of priority, but I'm just very philosophically against doing something that really we're doing because we erred in not saving money over time to take care of it. Lack of reserves, so to speak, for a general plan is our own mistake. So those are my comments, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I'll start with the $250,000, which to me is actually, in the past we've just called this, that we're spending reserves, you know, and I think maybe we're frankly overcomplicating it by treating it as a revenue fund rather than just saying that this year we're going to have to spend $250,000 in reserves, which is what we're effectively doing. We've done it in the past, so I don't have any problem with that. I think we're all struggling with what's really a pretty simple concept. You know, I'll just quickly speak to the – well, I'll stay in order. I'm sorry. I guess for me that what I'm looking for going forward is we're in a community that we've gone through some tough times, but we've also had some – I can remember a few years ago when we first had the sales tax fund come through and the redevelopment agency was starting to come together. And, you know, we thought we were sitting pretty good. I can remember saying, hey, this is going to be a good couple of years. And then the recession came, and then the redevelopment agency went away, and we were reorganizing and reorganizing and reorganizing. And that's why I'm exceptionally hesitant to add positions. The word layoff is like a criminal word to use. And when you bring employees on at some point, you're going to have to you have to deal with that, and we did it through all kinds of machinations, and that's not something I want to go through again. We frankly got that done, but we really didn't do it in the most efficient way possible, which is why I'm really hesitant. We're looking at four new full-time positions is what's being proposed here, even though they have offsetting costs. When push comes to shove and things change, we're going to have to be reducing position, whereas part-time positions are relatively easy to deal with and are a little bit cheaper. on the whole economic development issue, I appreciate that, yeah, we should definitely be out here looking, but it's not like this is the first time we thought of this. This isn't the first strike team idea. We've identified areas. We've identified specific spots, and sometimes they work out. Hampton Inn is a good example. There was a major effort to make the Hampton Inn happen. I'll just throw this out as an example. The Hampton Inn came in today and said they were going to build 150 rooms. Would we really be willing to allocate the water for it, even if it's $250,000 in revenue? So I'm pessimistic about getting bailed out by economic development. There's just not another regional center out there, and I can almost guarantee you that there's not another sales tax increase, and that's what's got us by in the past. So that's why I'm so hesitant about the positions. I was frankly hoping to find at least one we could pick off tonight, that we could make the argument that says, hey, this one's not going to make it. But two of them in particular, I was actually probably came in leaning this way anyway, the two I'm thinking of is actually the GIS position and the volunteer coordinator position, are two positions that really are, to use an overused term, leveraged. There's an expectation that they will deliver more than they cost. The reason I asked the question, kept asking the question, okay, so where's the payoff? Is somewhere there does have to be a payoff? And I'll just point out the police department, the budget does go up this year. It goes up about $300,000. So it's maybe we're seeing it, maybe we're not. I'm hesitant to say that the police department is a shadow of what it was in the past, but we may be doing less, but it's not costing less. And last night we struggled with how to provide another service, that we were very hesitant about increasing any expense for the fire department. The two basic services that we have, as noted out there, are struggling. We're struggling with how to serve. So we're certainly not going to do this tonight. We're not going to do this year. But we are going to have a serious talk, not just up here, but within our community, about the level of service and the kind of services that we're going to offer in the future. We're not going to. I don't believe we're going to be able to continue to offer the service level that we have in the past. There's just not that many efficiencies out there, and there's not the revenue to cover the increasing costs. So that's a discussion we're going to have. It's going to be, are we, recreation is obviously the first one that comes up, but there are other areas too. Are we going to spend more on fire than on police? Does the demographic justify the mix that we have? So I think that's a discussion that we have to have. Another thing that I was hesitant about doing here, we do have a new city manager coming on, and we're basically making a whole bunch of decisions for her tonight that she's going to deal with the consequences of down the road. We've just taken away a lot of options that she may or may not want to bring to the table. And the other two positions, the IT, again, I was hoping to see that be part-time, but I do get it. There's a lot of stuff out there, and if we're going to realize the improvements from some of these other technologies that we've installed, we're obviously going to have to keep them up and running. And the fourth position... Oh, the park employee position. Again, as long as that's a straight trade out, I kind of struggle that it really is. But I certainly, when we were contracting, I did have some concern that we were just getting down to too few employees in general to deal with issues when they came up. So I can see where there may be some efficiencies there. And certainly, I want to give staff I don't want to micromanage things. But as long as it's a straight trade out, I'm okay with that as well. Moving on to the fees, I'm fine with pet fee. Particularly, would like to see that we're at least sharing some of the savings. I just point out that there's a big bill coming when the county decides to build their new pet hotel. It's going to be really nice. So there you go. Well, I'm not going to call it the Taj Mahal. It's not that nice, but it's expensive. And even though we may reduce our demand, that's going to be a fixed cost. Everything we say will either just be transferred to somebody else, or our percentage will just go up. Just that it's out there. So on the fees, I'm fine with the GIS fee. I'm hesitant about the general plan fee, but I think that the advantage of the general plan fee isn't so much that it's another small fee that I agree, you know, when some developer looks down his list here and there's 35 things on it, here's just one more thing, that it can't be helpful. But it is a good point that we're not going to save for it unless it's in an enterprise fund. We've not saved for vehicles. We, you know, get them done one off. I pointed that out to Bob one day that, yeah, for all our not saving for it, when it comes time, we've been able to find the money generally out of the local sales tax fund to get these things done. But as a rule, we don't save for it. If the time that we need it done happens to come at a time that we're not at all flush, we don't have that $300,000 savings from the prior year, then we just don't do it. This is one of those years. We really should be doing that general plan this year, and we're going to skip it because we have other priorities. So I'm even okay with the general plan fund. There was mention of a IT fee as well, but I don't remember that from the staff report, but I don't know if that's getting mixed up with the GSI.
That's the GIS fee.
That is the GIS. Okay.
That's the GIS.
I just had that in my note here. So actually, at the end of the day, as much as I hate to be here because you've seen me do this a few times, I'm in support of everything that's here tonight. I was hoping we would find some savings somewhere just on principle. But I do want to point out a couple of things that I'd like to see us looking at for the future. The first one of these is something that I actually thought was a pretty unique idea, but when I talked to Bob about it, he pointed out to me that's actually used fairly often, and that is the idea of using your rec department somewhere like Soto Field as an enterprise fund where we actually recover full cost, and then we formally subsidize whatever organizations out of there we want to, so we at least know how much we're spending. At this point, there's some amount of money that we spend on Soto Field that we don't recover, but we don't really know what that is. So I'd like to see us look at that as a project for next year that we could then look at for at least getting better accounting in that area. And I think that might tie in with the thing I heard last night, which was about the Arroyo Grande Community Foundation. The two pieces together are actually are possibly a way of dealing with this in the future, so that we will have at least the base services are much more sustainable, and the other services will fluctuate with the direct expectations of our citizens. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I appreciate the balanced budget. I appreciate all staff's immense amount of work that you guys went through to put this together. The workshop was helpful because we had a lot of discussion then and then working through it again. The public works maintenance worker, I'm glad to hire them. This frees up Jeff to do more higher level work and give some work to the city arborist. And in turn, it's not really a net impact, and so I'm fine with that. And I think it actually makes the public works department more efficient and separates some of the jobs that are being done. And I think it's a good idea. The volunteer coordinator, I think it's a good idea. It's going to generate some revenue, hopefully, to go out and create some more special interest classes, which we saw really picked up and people are interested in. Also, the idea of them going to each of the different departments to find out what kind of volunteers. We know there's lots of people in the community that would volunteer. We don't really have an avenue for people to find out who needs volunteers. So I really think that volunteer coordinator is going to touch every department and hopefully in a positive way that perhaps could reduce some of the expenditures by volunteering. So I think that's sort of a no-brainer, the volunteer coordinator, and I appreciate John Rogers finding that position out there and researching it and bringing it to Arroyo Grande. I think it's perfect for Arroyo Grande. The IT specialist, again, every department uses IT daily. As we go further on, we realize how much more we're going to use it. I mean, you can just look 2 years ago and look at what is available on just an iPhone. So I can't even imagine. And I know that the police, the fire, public works, parks, everyone uses it. And I can't understand that having Walt to be the only person and has to run around to different departments, especially when they're in different parts of town. And I think that this is, to me, that's a really important position that all the departments are going to use. The animal impound fee, I think this is, I mean, obviously that's a good idea. It's reducing the amount of fee the city pays and reducing the amount of fee that our citizens are going to pay. But more than that, I think it's, I mean, I've had to, my parents have had to go get their dog at the county a day later, and the fees were astronomical, and it was inconvenient, and so I really appreciate that customer serving idea being brought to the police department. I think that's really innovative, and I appreciate that. The general plan update fee, again, we should be updating our general plan, and we're not updating our general plan because there are other priorities that are maybe a little bit more important, but the general plan updates are absolutely necessary. We haven't done one in a while. We aren't setting the money aside. I think that I tried to sort of look at the range of what this cost would be. From the research that Therese has done with other cities, it looked like it was maybe $75, $100, not a ton of money. And I think that 12 years from now, if when we update the general plan, hopefully again, I think that we'll be glad that we had some money set aside. We might not have any money set aside at that time. And I think it's something that we can't keep putting off. I think it's important that the city, the citizens get involved, the staff gets involved, and we update our general plan because needs change and wants change, and our vision changes. So I think it's important going forward. And so basically, I'm in support of what staff is requesting tonight, and I did want to just touch on something that a speaker brought up regarding the fire authority. The comparison I had made to the BCs and the commanders the other evening when we talked about this, it's not that the commanders, they don't need two commanders. They do need two commanders. And so I was just trying to compare the workload and the work duties because I'm absolutely in support of law enforcement, just like police. They both put their lives on the line every day in this community. And so I just think I was just bringing it up to sort of compare apples to apples. And and you're right, police departments are commonly funded much more generously than fire departments, sometimes two, three, four times as much. But that doesn't make it right. So I'm just trying to sort of compare the two and just get to a better place than we are now. And the issue of paying our firemen to sleep, they work 24 hours. They're probably not sleeping a lot. They're maybe sleeping 5 or 6 hours, interrupted. And they do a terrific job. And if you really knew what was involved in a fireman, I think you'd think differently. Thank you.
Okay, comments on the budget are, first of all, some of the things that regarding priorities, reduction of various line item accounts, absolutely necessary. And I guess one of my issues with outside agencies that the city contributes to is that I'm very confident that the city's gone over the line items with a magnifying glass and a pretty much of a fine-tooth comb, and I sincerely appreciate that. And I guess my concern is that some of the agencies that the city contributes to, or such as the fire authority, that I'm less familiar with the line items, but seeing the struggle that the city's departments go through, I think that wise management of the fire authority would certainly put that same level of scrutiny that the city has put into their budget. And to the extent that that's already happened, I appreciate that. Additional PERS required contributions, we'll get to that after a bit. Workers' comp, things are going up. That's true in the private sector as well as the public sector. Salary adjustments, yes, because those were put on hold for some time. Information services tech, we've heard the necessity for that from every department. GIS system tech, I can agree with that as well. The fee for that, that does directly... We're in an interesting time that I'll contrast that with the general plan proposed fee. The general plan is something that the city has to deliver by state law. So that is something that is, I think, all of the residents, everyone in the city has to pay that. Development has a little bit of impact on that as long as it's in conformance with the general plan, and some I tend to oppose fee creep just on its own merits or demerits, but where a number of development proposals come in with general plan amendment requirements and things like that. In those cases, I think a fee is probably appropriate because that's something that's not included in the existing general plan. We're going to have to amend the general plan. That obviously has a cost associated with it, and I think there's a reasonable basis for charging reasonable fees there. Also, it is quite an expensive proposition. The part-time volunteer coordinator, great idea. I think that's something that'll leverage benefits back to the city. I can strongly support that. Parks worker, clearly we need personnel. We don't want our public works director going out and inspecting trees. It's just not a cost-effective way to do business. And bringing in a worker to be able to do that so that our director and our senior staff can devote more time to things that they should be working on, in my view, rather than trees. Not that trees aren't important, but in terms of doing inspections related to trees and things like that, I don't think we're getting really our benefit of our money spent on that at this time. Reclassification of the two public works supervisor positions, absolutely. We need the management control there. Classification of the public works office assistant, yes, I agree with that also. We've discussed some of the fire authority budget recommendation items, and again, would encourage them to look internally and come up with that. I guess part of my discomfort with that is we are at the five-year point. We're kind of crossing the five-year line, and I'm expecting to see reports and analyses that will really look at terms of cost efficiency, looking at it as the authority. We've been in operation now 5 years. We have a good basis of experience. There's, as we said the other night, the quality of service here is excellent. And what I think we need to do now is leverage as best we can the whatever cost savings in terms of the it was originally when the fire authority was originally proposed, it was looked at as a three-part harmony, if you will. And I think if we're really going to consider it as a fire authority for that jurisdiction, it needs to be looked at on that general basis. So the fees, again, the pet impound fee, I think that's a great idea. It's a service that's necessary in the community. It provides a savings for the police department and the residents, as Mayor Pro Tem mentioned. Absolutely a great idea. full cost analysis of all the city's existing fees. We need to go forward with that. I don't think that our economic development is so much constrained by our fees have to, fees for service have to collect the full cost, because otherwise it devolves to the residents to fill in behind that. So that cost analysis is going to have to be done make sure that we're on track with all of our fees. So volunteer coordinator. Salaries and benefits, yes. The citywide phone system is something that was instituted to save costs. I have heard that some of the residents have had trouble getting through on the phone, or phone calls aren't returned, and this is a level of service issue. So hopefully our new system will promote answering the phones rather than impede that. And I guess I'd kind of like to see at some point a customer survey, a customer experience survey, to see how we're doing on things like automated programs and automated phone systems. GIS licensing, yeah, we need to do that. I'm kind of surprised that we have a single user license. GSB, Public Works. Okay, then we come up to the things that we don't have. I would hope that when we start to look at the police sergeant and support services could be considered when, you know, any funding or anything that can be captured because of the potential for promotion from within in our own department and the chances of advancement there. And lastly, I'm very concerned about the attraction and retention of police officers, and specifically the police officer and sergeant positions, which I would actually like to see additional increases of an additional 2% to go to those classifications, and our property and evidence personnel to see an additional increase, because I think we're significantly under budgeted there, and the we've seen the effects in terms of attraction and retention of personnel. So those are my comments. My closing comment is to look at the last page 147 of the budget, and where we're going through with the PERS adjustments and that. It looks like we're pretty well okay until the 17-18 budget year, and then the fund balances and so forth start to show parentheses from then on out, and it's an increasing numbers that show up in those parentheses, and that needs to concern every one of us. And I know it concerns my fellow council members. It concerns the citizens, and it concerns all of us, the staff. So it's where the rubber meets the road, and it's time to look, time to cut whatever we can, and sustainability has got to be the thing going forward. That has to be the new mantra: economic development, sustainability. Those are the only things that are going to keep us going. So hopefully that's an upbeat comment. And I thank the staff very much for this. Is a tremendous amount of work on behalf of all of the staff, and I think the interim city manager's done a great job. The admin director and Ryan, you guys have done a fabulous job. I know this is it's like tax time for an accountant. You guys, budget time for you guys is the same thing. Hopefully you'll be able to, after we get this thing put to bed, you'll be able to get a little bit of breathing time off. And to all of the directors and all of the staff that have put in their suggestions, the collaborative effort that's gone into the budget here among the various departments is a model of good government in my view. I'm very proud of the staff for the way they've worked together and the interdepartmental cooperation that's shown up in the budget proposals here. So I think that pretty much concludes the item. Have we given in sufficient direction to staff and comments that you can move forward?
I'll make a couple of rapid comments that when comparing notes, so excuse me, I'm not sure that we got clarity on the pass from you on the pass through fee for the women's club for the security and custodial.
I support that definitely.
And then just for my record on the general plan update fee, I wanted to ensure what your thought was on that.
On the general plan update fee, I think the general plan is, it's a state requirement that the city has to do. I'm generally not favorable on just the routine general plan update fee. However, there are numbers of developments that come in requests that require a general plan amendment. And in those cases, I think it's reasonable to assess a general plan update fee.
Great. That was my understanding. I wanted to ensure that. Mr. Mayor, Member of Council, on behalf of the staff, I want to express tremendous appreciation for the attention and the detail that you've gone through in the budget. And we know that any time of deliberating of a spending additional portion of the public's fund is a very tough decision. We appreciate your support on these matters. I can't even begin to tell you how much I know that everybody in the audience who's worked on this so hard is appreciative of that. On the salaries, we will be distributed a note this afternoon. There will be an additional consideration in the next 2 weeks to consider any additional salaries that was noted this evening, and that'll be at a separate notation. But we have provided across the board the disclosure exactly what was intended within the MOUs. But if there's anything additional, there'll be an opportunity to discuss that.
Can I just confirm one thing?
I just want to clarify, we've talked about putting Shane in a more appropriate status. That money's coming out of the water fund, and as that's being done. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, you addressed that this evening. Again, thank you very much, and I would like to extend my personal appreciation to both Debbie and Ryan. They've been the backbone of this whole number crunching process and have provided a tremendous amount of support to all the departments. And again, my personal appreciation to be able to work with all of you executives in the entire management team in this process. It was a rewarding experience, and I know that one council member in a note that I got back about this referred to the team as awesome, and I think that's an extremely descriptive word to be using to describe this team. They are absolutely awesome. Thank you very much.
Okay, brings us to item 12 on the agenda, which is City Council reports. I'll start off. I did attend the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. Quite honestly, I've been so wrapped up in the budget reviews and so often that I haven't even looked at my notes about what happened at that meeting. So I'll have to bring that back at the next council meeting. And there's been pretty much no other, none of the other mentioned responsibilities have met. So, Mayor Pro Tem.
Let's see. So the Zone 3 Water Advisory Board met, and we talked a little bit about that at our last meeting. Zone 3 recommended, on the advice of the TAC, the Technical Advisory Committee, a 10% delivery reduction to the agencies, even though we aren't at, we're 37.5% full in Lopez, about 18,000 acre feet. We expect to get to that mark of 15,000 acre feet October 1st, which is when we might do the 10% reduction. But the TAC thought that this was, we were sort of thinking ahead, and that we were going to get there because of the rain that we hadn't had. And being proactive, we decided to reduce that. That won't affect the agencies. It won't affect Roy Grandy because we already have reduced the citizens are already saving so much water that it won't. It'll just stay behind the dam, that 10% reduction. The HSOC, Homeless Services Oversight Council, we met last week. A couple things to report on. We voted, I think it was unanimous, voted to make a formal recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to push forward up to the state level, prohibiting landlords from refusing to rent to qualified tenants based solely on the basis of having housing choice vouchers. Right now, you can't discriminate against tenants for source of income, SOI, but you can. There is sort of a loophole that if you have a voucher which isn't paid directly from the tenant to the landlord, it's paid from the county or the state, you can discriminate because it's sort of a different way it's being paid. And so that is causing some landlords to be able to discriminate on that fact only. So that was unanimous on that. The 50 Now program that transitions mental health in the county where they're housing the 50 most vulnerable homeless, though they have sort of some numbers for that, they're 28 of the most vulnerable homeless have been housed since the program started. And just for example, after being housed, because this is the whole idea of housing first, how it helps the homeless, 143 of those homeless people they had 143 visits to the ER in the prior year, but after being housed, there were only 13. There are only 13 visits, and so it drastically reduces arrests, visits to the ER and such. So it seems to be working really well. On average, those that are being housed have been homeless for 80 years. So it's a very successful program.
I'm sorry, what was the number related to after being housed? How for the ER? Well, how did that?
13 visits to the ER. Okay. There was 143 for the whole year prior.
Okay, very good.
We had the veteran stand down event, which is invitation to homeless veterans and veterans at risk of being homeless participate. They come to the Veterans Hall in San Luis Obispo. There were 166 participants, 95 of them were new participants, and 45 were from the South County. At the two-day event, there's showers, there's pet services, there's employers such as PG&E, Solarponics, there's clothes donations, and so that was a really successful event that was held on May 20th. And I think that's all my items to report. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, on the Slow Cog RTA, the RTA met last month. We did adopt the budget. There's no real changes that affect us down here too much. There's no additional cost to the city. The LTF funds, which were pretty critical, that I spoke about two meetings ago, don't affect the RTA that much because they don't have any real capital expenses this year. The other item there for the RTA is that they are going to do the youth ride free again. So all you parents who don't want to drive your kids around, one possibility is to put them on the bus. And I'll just add here that South County Transit is following up on that program as well, with a slight exception that if you're a large group, some of the, I think you asked about the YMCA, that they can only bring on 10 people at a time, and then they'll have to pay for them beyond 10. I think that's more about trying to control the number of people on the bus. South County Transit also met. We also adopted a budget. There is, at this point, there is no effect to the city's budget. They intend to do it within last year's expenses. One caveat to that is that the drivers did vote to join the union back on May 17th. There may be expenses related to that that will affect that and may require them to come back here. It's not anticipated because the union drivers with the RTA, which would be the comparison, the difference in scale isn't that much, but there may be some other issues related to that. The tourism committee. The tourism committee is reviewing through an RFP process to select the marketing company for next year. We had actually, I think they had almost 10 applicants, which surprised me. We did get it down to two fairly quickly, and the main committee will actually, which is the committee with the hotels on it, will be making that decision. We have not had a Briscoe Halcyon meeting since our last report, and that concludes my reports. Thank you.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Waste Management met, and we had a really interesting presentation by a number of local vendors regarding composting of green materials, including food waste. One of the big issues you have with that is when it's outdoors, it smells, and that's why they had to stop it at the local waste facility, and then we were trucking our green waste quite a ways, and there's green gas emissions, and there's expense to doing that. The most fascinating thing, I thought, was they had somebody that come in that has done composting in Europe with indoor facilities that you then turn into energy, and Waste Management is recommending that process versus the other two people that presented over the long term. And Waste Management has a current facility that they would build onto and make it, I think, either the first or second facility in California and I think in the U.S. For this type of process. So it's exciting. The only thing I'm a little nervous about is it's going to probably come with some sort of request from Waste Management for a fee increase to build out the facility. But the process itself is really fascinating, and I'm really excited to see how that goes. So that was that. EVC met yesterday. Bob Peralt from Grover Beach made a presentation about basically the state of Grover Beach, and he was very excited about the hotel conference area, talked about the struggles with the Coastal Commission. They also have another hotel they're building in which they're trying to connect trails to the beach. Most excitedly, I think, the fact that they got the revenue bond for the streets, I think that was a huge, huge issue. And he kept describing how they were a small city with a small budget and the struggles that they had, but he felt like they were on the upswing, so that was really good. Secondly, we had a presentation about something called 805 Connect, and that really gave me I found that to be exciting. It was a venture by a gentleman out of Santa Barbara who was trying to connect Ventura, Santa Barbara, and our area through the business community, and it would be basically a service similar to LinkedIn, but it would be strictly for things like business-to-business commerce. So if you wanted to find someone in your local area that was doing the type of business that you need, you could just get online and look it up and find them. It's going to go gangbusters, and I have every intention of talking to the chamber about it because I think they could really promote it. It's going to be... funded in a way that it's going to be very successful. They get all their information from Dun & Bradstreet to put on the system. So the the information's really accurate, and I don't know, it was really a good thing to see. So that's my report, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Harmon.
Yes, thank you. The Water Resource Advisory Council, two items of discussion monopolized the meeting last month. We'll have an upcoming meeting this coming Wednesday. The first item centered on the designated reserves in the amount of $11.8 million contained in the Flood Control and Water Conservation District budget and how the reserves are utilized. The existing budget subcommittee will meet and provide additional recommendations regarding that topic. The second item related to the urban water neutral development, the urban water neutral new development and urban water waste prevention and the countywide water conservation program for both urban and agriculture for the Paso Robles water basin. Also, RAC reviewed the final EIR of the Letitia Ag Cluster and recommended to the county planning that the project is not sustainable for the water resources and should deny the project. The Air Pollution Control District met yesterday. There was a presentation outlining the update of state guidelines for health risk assessments by the Children's, and this is prompted by there's a Children's Environmental Health Protection Act that went into effect in 1999. The updated guidelines are designed to improve the way estimations for potential lifetime cancer and non-cancer risk resulting from air toxins. By refining this data for individuals of all ages with adjustments based on new science regarding the increased childhood sensitivity to these cancers and non-cancerous risks, air toxics. Does everybody follow? Okay. The preliminary budget was discussed also, and there's a recommendation for a 9% decrease in the overall budget, and that will be coming back to the board on June 17th for final discussion. Also at that meeting, the Air Resources Board will be there and the State Park Service will be there to give an update related to compliance on rule, the Dust Rule 1001, to see where the mitigation measures, where they're at with them, and what progress has been made with those. There was a lengthy discussion related to that Dust Rule 1001, related to the current effectiveness of that Dust Rule, and based on the recent appellate court ruling related to the permit that is also contained in that Dust Rule and the best way to go about addressing that, as well as to seek the possibility of a discussion of other alternatives, which could include an MOU. Apparently, the State Parks Association and two parks in the southern area with similar issues related to dust actually have very effective MOUs. The reason that there was some suggestion of exploring that is because the Dust Rule 101 is plagued with liability and litigation for the Air Pollution Control District. So we really wanted to take a look at that to see if that's a more effective way to focus on what we really need to get done related to mitigating health concerns related to the particulate dust that's blowing and avoid additional costs for the board. There's been about $1 million in litigation fees in the last 18 months over Dust Rule 1001. So we're really looking to see what we can do to be more effective with that. And then the Five Cities Fire Authority, in addition to the preliminary budget, had three items. The board authorized the purchase of a replacement thermal imaging camera using funds from the Fireman's Fund Heritage Program grant award, and also funding supplemented from the general fund. The camera cost was $10,716. The grant funds covered $8,093 of that, and the general fund picked up $2,623. Item number two was the adoption of a resolution calling for portal-to-portal reimbursement for personnel responding to mutual aid requests. The state now requires a resolution that will assure that our personnel will be reimbursed for all costs and overtime from portal to portal. Without this resolution in place, the only reimbursements the state would give us would be for the actual hours worked. So in other words, the aid team goes down, they would have all of the expenses plus any overtime that they might accrue, and the only reimbursement we would get would be when they were on the fire line itself, once they get to San Bernardino or whatever it might be. So that was adopted to make sure we're getting every nickel and dime from that mutual aid. And lastly, a contract was awarded to K.D. Johnny Landscaping for contracting service for the annual weed abatement program, and that square foot charge for each lawn mowed, dist, or weed whacked was at 8.02. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Council communications. Start with that. Kristen?
Just one. Barbara and I went to a memorial today for Bruce Sutherland, who was the workers' compensation attorney for the city of Arroyo Grande. I've known him for 20 years plus, passed away, just a true gentleman, really good at what he did, and was great support to me as well. So he will be missed.
Nothing further, Mayor.
Okay, I was honored to be able to attend the Memorial Day celebration at the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. To remember the true spirit of Memorial Day, which is those service members that have given their lives in the service so that we can enjoy the freedoms and the lifestyle that we have here. And it was an honor to attend that. Today I had the very great pleasure of attending the Energy Academy at Arroyo Grande High School. And this is a partnership between the school and businesses. And in this particular case, it's PG&E who made a donation to the Academy. And it was just a pleasure to see the young people in that program and the enthusiasm. It focuses on science, technology, engineering, math, and history, and it's kind of a combination of desk work, reading and instruction books and so forth, and then actual hands-on work. They're building actually small modular, like a 10-foot square, effectively a house unit, standard 8-foot walls and studs. They'll insulate it. They'll have solar panels on the roof, and they'll be able to have energy experiments and so forth inside. And it was a really nice opportunity to get to see that. I wasn't familiar with that program at all. And the level of enthusiasm there that I saw from the young people in the program was really wonderful. And our future's in good hands, looking at our young people in programs like that. So is there any staff communication?
None this evening.
Closing community comment and suggestions. Would anyone like to address the council on anything this evening? Hearing none. Concludes the business of the council this evening. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.